Okay, if you'll stand and join us in the Pledge of Allegiance, we'll get the meeting started. Good evening, everyone. Thank you for joining us on the Thursday, June 5th, 2008 meeting of the Los Osos Community Services District Board of Directors. Could we have a roll call, please, Ms. Vega?
Director Sennett.
Here.
Director Schicker.
Here.
Director Sparks.
Here.
President Cesania.
Here. Mr. Seitz, could we have a report out of closed session, please?
Remember how to do this yesterday. And then pursuant to the Brown Act, items can be added to the agenda under two express conditions. One, that the need to consider the item occurred after the agenda was posted, which clearly was the case because of yesterday's mailing. And two, that there's a need to take immediate action, and that, of course, is to have legal counsel present during closed session and the meetings. So pursuant to those two findings, the board did place on the closed session agenda an item to consider the appointment of an interim legal counsel. And that was passed on a 4-0 vote, with Joe just being a little bit late and not being able to participate in that vote. So I will have the general manager now make the report about what the board's action was.
The board voted 5-0. To hire Shipley and Seitz as the interim district legal counsel, pending advertising for a permanent general counsel, but that'll be action for a future meeting.
Mr. Seitz, did you have something else you were going to add?
Yeah, and as to those other items that were listed on the agenda under the closed session agenda item, the board did hear an update on the pending litigation. Of course, I heard an update on the pending litigation at the same time. But the board did not take reportable action. And that concludes the closed session.
Thank you. Okay, tonight, again, we have one of our favorite chores to take care of. Actually, it's not even a chore. It's a joy to be able to welcome new firefighters and keep our community strong and safe. And so we will administer the oath of office to four new reserve firefighters. Joining us on the crew tonight would be Nick Fields, Kenyon Muthart, Andrew Robles, and Sandy Wynn. And I believe, Chief Vanaris, you're going to do the honors.
Mr. President, I'd like to introduce you to Nick Fields on the far left there, Kenyon Muthart, Andrew Robles, and Sandra Wynn. Four young folks here trying to get a little community service done, a little work done. 350 hours worth of training has got them to this point, so we're honored to have them.
That's not a little community service. That's a lot of time put in already. It's my pleasure to administer the oath of office to you tonight. The Constitution of the United States And the Constitution of the State of California.
The Constitution of the State of California.
Against all enemies.
Against all enemies.
Foreign and domestic.
Foreign and domestic.
That I will bear true faith and allegiance.
That I will bear true faith and allegiance.
To the Constitution of the United States. And the Constitution of the State of California. That I take this obligation freely. Without any mental reservation. Or purpose of evasion. That I will well and faithfully discharge. The duties upon which I am about to enter. Congratulations. Thank you.
Actually, Aunt May, come around here so we can get the right way. Right, go ahead. All right. Come around. All right, congratulations, guys.
Okay, great. That's always nice to have one feel-good item on the agenda. Okay, at this point, we will move on to general public comment. And this is the time for each of you to come and give us 3 minutes of your thoughts for items that are not on the agenda. Please reserve all comments for items that are on the agenda until the appropriate time. And address the president when you speak, and we will start public comment.
Good evening. Thank you. My name is Al Barrow, Coalition for Low-Income Housing, and I hope everybody will start thinking about our homeless people. Been down to Mississippi Delta and seen black children starving in hovels, and he came back to his children, and he said, your dining room is crystal chandeliers and linen. And you have an obligation because you're more fortunate than they are to help other people. And I think we are, as a community, very fortunate to live here, and we should not ignore our obligation to help those that are less fortunate than we are. On a second note, I'd like to talk a little bit about the county's attitude towards sustainability, towards an affordable sewer, and towards an EIR that will address global warming. I don't think that Paavo Ogren is on board with that. And when I talked to Bredeman's representative, the EIR company, he told me, well, we had an earthquake in Northridge and the gravity sewer was okay, except for a few pipes that stuck up and so forth and so on. But Northridge isn't in saturated sand dunes. So, I think somebody has to get that message to them somehow. I don't know how we can do that, but I think we need to maybe make a resolution as a CSD that we really feel those concerns have to be addressed and we want to see them addressed. With that, I'll just let it go at that. Thank you very much, and thank you for all your service. I'm very sorry about the lawsuit from the Taxpayers Watch that threatens your property. I think it's very unfair, and I think the community should come out and support all of you.
Thank you. Any other public comment during the general public comment period? This is for items not on the agenda.
Good evening. I'm Bruce Payne, resident of Los Osos. I want to welcome John aboard. He did an excellent job for the board we had to recall. I hope he'll work as hard for the board that took the place of the recall. One of the things that I want to say just in general public comment is we've been told the price of gravity was lowered from the $160 million that we had contracts out for. And they've neglected to tell you that the county wants the streets repaired after they dig them up to put the pipe in. Pavement edge to pavement edge. Other places they'd say curb to curb, but we don't have to worry about that. But they do want 6 inches of Class A base, which a lot of that pavement's just spread on sand, so that's why it breaks up. But the mile or so that we had tore up ahead of time, the front loading of the contract, some of it was just cut in strips and broke up and hauled away, I guess. That cost almost $1 million to fix that. So 45 miles of pavement, you can back that off by 1 mile because we already fixed that. It's got a mile of leaky pipes underneath it right now, bell connectors. What are they, every 20 foot? The point being that looks like another $40 million in street repair, street building that the county's neglected to do because they were going to tear it up anyway. So add that to the $160 million that we had before, and you're over $200 million. So think about that in the gravity collection if you want that. Thank you. Bye.
David Los Osos, wow. What an election. Two to go in January. They can still do a lot of harm. We must compel the county to put a water reuse recycle element into this wastewater project. So, revenue generating. They will become a water purveyor in that case as well. But if this CSD wants to take that project over and that's part of the project, hurry for us. Septic receiving station, AB885, the way the Regional Water Board is doing things, this county's going to need its own receiving station. Biosolid processing. People are going to go out there, they live out there, and they're going to go, no way, we can't do that. Where is it going to go? What's the most economical place to put it? It's going to be there. So we need to go to Department of Water Resources and get them to compel the county to join them in a study of the water that is being wasted, being dumped into the ocean by Morro Bay, over 2 million gallons a day, as well as not using the million gallons plus that this project's going to have for water reuse and recycle. All of those things I just talked about are revenue generating. And Lord knows the county needs the money. And we need some place to put that stuff. I think that's the only way that we can do it. But I think that let's look at what the codes say, what the Department of Water Resources can do, and compel the county to comply. Thank you.
Don Bearden, Los Osos. There's a group of people that have an agenda to disrupt the operation of the CSD. They do this by quibbling over the cost of cake for the staff on special occasions and small purchases such as framing pictures. They would have the CSD spend thousands of dollars for an audit to find these minor expenditures. I suspect that this is more a personal vendetta against the staff. I wish it would stop. As for all this talk about what you need to do as far as a wastewater treatment plant or what the county is doing with a wastewater treatment, I just want to remind you that AB 2701 gave the county authority. Now then, if the county wants to dump it back on the CSD, then you have your opportunity. But other than that, I think we need to allow the county process to go forward, get in line, put our comments in on the EIR that they come up with, try to force the county to do, via the proper channels, what you would like it to do. Thank you.
I have one additional announcement that I should have made earlier concerning the agenda tonight. I'd forgotten that we will be pulling item 1D under administrative and committee reports. We were hoping to have Burke Williams and Sorensen here tonight to give that presentation, and they are not present, so we will not have it. Any further general public comment?
Yes, Jerry Walsh. Certain citizens of Los Osos who are now celebrating Los Osos were not celebrating Los Osos the day after the recall of the last CSD board. In fact, they had so much hatred in their hearts that these same citizens, some of whom were citizens of the year, actually, wrote and emailed the water board to find their fellow citizens out of existence. I'm going to read you an excerpt of one. At Rose Bowker's Memorial, I asked you to find the community of Los Osos if the recall is successful. Well, I am asking you again. Please do this immediately and with the largest fine that is legal for you to do. My honest opinion is that if your fine is large enough to bankrupt the CSD and place all of the services back in the hands of the county, I know they will move this project forward. This was written on 9/29 at 9:05 a.m. the day after the recall. This was to Roger Briggs from Jerry Gregory. Richard is going to read you some more of the Celebrating Los Osos excerpts. Thank you.
Richard Margetson, my first comment is to Mr. Bearden's comment about the supposed nitpicky costs that are on the CSD's register, check register this month and past months. I would hope that everybody from Taxpayer Watch attends the budget hearings next week to figure out how this district's going to stay viable if we can afford to frame pictures at $349 and pay for $5,000 calendars to go out to the water district customers. But I'm going to talk about that later. The emails I'm going to talk about, it's time the community remembers again how some of these cost burdens were put upon you. The recall was on the 27th. That evening, at 12:40, Pandora Nash Kiner wrote a number of gentlemen, including David Edge, Mr. LeGros, Gordon Hensley. Gentlemen, granted it's late, but could the Los Osos CSD transfer the sewer project to the county before the current CSD-3 leave office? That was at 12:40 that evening, the night of the recall. The next morning, Mr. Edge contacted Pandora and said, at this point, the authority lies with the CSD for the project and the county can't take it over. At 8:45 that morning, she responded to Mr. Edge, I hope the CSD gets fined out of existence fast enough to save the contractors and the low-interest loan. Save the contractors and the low-interest loan. No discussion of saving our community, the people that can't afford the project. The next actually that evening, Mr. Briggs contacted Pandora and stated this, or Pandora contacted Mr. Briggs. I'd like to talk to you about a potential strategy from the property owners to stop the new board from stopping the project. I'll call you Thursday morning. Mr. Briggs' response came at 4:25 in the morning that next day. I have a meeting at 8 o'clock with the board chair. Should be done by 9. That Sunday, Pandora put out an announcement to her supporters. We have just learned that a new group has formed, tentatively called Taxpayer Watch. Nice sequence of events. We want to meet with you, Mr. Briggs, to talk about how the citizens can help you. 4 days later, Taxpayer Watch is formed. And then we went to the court hearing before Judge McKay, and it's all been downhill since then. Thank you.
Any additional public comment tonight? This is for items not on the agenda. Okay, seeing none, we'll bring it back to the board and move on to general action item A. This is adopting a resolution authorizing the extension of the solid waste franchise agreement. Mr. Schimpf, did you have anything you wanted to add to this agenda item at the moment?
I'll yield to Mr. Sykes.
Oh, okay.
Mr. President, members of the board, members of the audience and staff, as you're probably all aware, a number of years ago, this district included within its power solid waste. We went through the LAFCO process to obtain that. At that particular time, we were required to essentially adopt the county contract because of the way that transferring franchise areas work. What's before you tonight is a resolution that has already been signed by Mr. Martin for Mission Country Disposal, Inc., that would extend this contract to August 29, 2008. And the reason why staff is requesting that extension is to address a number of issues that Mission Country, along with its affiliates, are facing regarding landfill issues and compliance with Air Pollution Control Board requirements on low emissions. I'm sure there's a number of other issues that all these folks are facing, but those are the two principal ones. Just to be clear, Mission Country is an affiliate of Waste Connection, Inc., which is a very large solid waste disposal company, and including what's included within the umbrella of Waste Connection, Inc. is not only Mission Country, which serves us, but San Luis Garbage and South County Sanitary Services, Inc. Also under their umbrella is the Cold Canyon Landfill. Cold Canyon Landfill is roughly down to about 2.5 years of remaining capacity. Waste Connection, Inc. has filed an application with the County of San Luis Obispo to expand Cold Canyon's capacity, and an environmental impact report is being prepared. The proposed expansion would provide for 30 years of future disposal capacity. Additionally, I think people are aware the APC, which is the Air Pollution Control Board, is taking a look at all large truck operations, including those trucks that provide us with solid waste collection, and they're going to require low emission trucks to address pollution. Some of these would suggest that they'll be switching to CNG, gas-powered gas trucks, in the near future. All of this is going to require our garbage companies to obtain loans in order to advance costs for the Cold Canyon Landfill and upgrade their fleets. Mr. Martin, on behalf of all of those affiliates, has been going around to different agencies and requesting a 15-year extension, a 15-year franchise agreement, with the thought that they'll get better rates from lending institutions the longer the term and the longer the commitment, therefore the lower the rates. And with a longer franchise agreement, they can spread the cost of these borrowed funds over a longer period of time. So that same request has been made to the district for a 15-year extension. Fortunate for us, there are a number of other agencies that are considering 15-year extensions, the City of Pismo Beach, Arroyo Grande, the County of San Luis Obispo. In fact, all of these local agencies that are provided waste collection through WCI. And what staff is recommending is that we enter into this extension so that we can have the benefit of seeing all these other contracts as they are proposed, negotiated, and approved by these other local agencies so that we can assure the district and our residents that we're getting the best possible rates consistent with other what other agencies are doing. Mission Country has agreed to this extension. The resolution that's before you is signed by Mr. Martin, agreeing to the extension. I just have one little caveat that I want to bring up. If you take a look at this resolution, I'm sure that Mr. Martin thought this resolution was going to be considered after the rate increase that's two items down your agenda. And this resolution provides that the franchise agreement as amended and without application or benefit of a rate increase. Well, of course, the very next two items forward is a rate increase. So I just want to make sure that the board in their if they're going to move forward with this resolution and the extension, that they acknowledge that the rate increase in tonight's agenda is exempt from the requirement that's in the resolution. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions from the board members? Seeing none, okay. No questions? Then I guess we're on to general public comment on this item. Anyone from the public want to comment? No, that's a separate agenda item. Public hearing. Yeah. Okay, no public comment. We'll bring. Oh, okay.
Just one real quick comment, and that is, it's good to hear that they've got plans to extend the landfill for another 30 years. There are a lot of communities in this state that are running out of places to put their landfill, and it's really hard to convince people next door to the land that they're trying to acquire to make a landfill that they should have that next door to them. So it's good to hear that they've got plans in place to do the 30 years. We'll need that. Thank you.
Any other general public or public comment on action item A? Okay, I'm seeing none. We'll bring it back to the board this time. What?
I move to adopt staff recommendation, adopt the resolution.
I'll second that with the caveat that Mr. Seitz mentioned that next item or the ordinance would be exempt.
Okay, that's a motion and a second. This is in resolution, so we will need a voice vote. Actually, I mean a roll call. Yeah, individual voices.
Director Sennett?
Yes.
Director Schicker?
Yes.
Director Sparks?
Yes.
Vice President Tacker?
Yes.
President Sesania?
Yes. Okay, resolution passed unanimously. With that, we're on to general action item B, approve funding of the Purveyor's Basin Management Planning and Proposed Work Plan. And I Assume we're going to hear from Mr. Seitz on this. No? Boy, I'm guessing wrong. Mr. Miller on this.
Yes, indeed, Mr.
President. I'm not used to seeing you here.
I know. It's like a...
Or Mr. Seitz, for that matter.
It's a surprise.
We have all kinds of extra treats tonight.
John would like to be the engineer, but not tonight, John. Sorry. Well, tonight it'll be, I think, a very important topic for us. I understand that the district's facing a number of challenges that may make it difficult to implement all of staff's recommendations. However, it is still good, because it's been a long time, to report on progress with the group of purveyors. So for starters, we'll remind some folks in the community, although looking at the faces, everyone's really aware, but for the TV audience, the Los Osos groundwater basin currently supplies water to many different types of customers, three purveyors, which is the district, Golden State Water Company, an investor-owned private utility, the S&T Mutual Water Company, and then there's many other individual pumpers of groundwater, agriculture, private wells. And we have a basin that supplies all this water. The source of water for that basin, the recharge, comes from, again, many sources: rainfall, creeks, irrigation return flow, septic system discharge, and leakage from different aquifer zones. I'm going to go quickly through these slides because I know that you've got an agenda tonight to go through, but just so we can all remember, these are shows the limits of the Los Osos Valley groundwater basin stretching well out into the ocean. And for those of you who remember the term safe yield, that's the amount of well pumping that maintains groundwater levels safely above sea level, even when it's dry, even during drought periods. If you go beyond the yield of a basin, particularly a coastal basin, then seawater becomes an unlimited source of unwanted recharge. We'll always have plenty of water, but if we use too much, it will be seawater that we have plenty of. The deeper the well, the more prone it is to seawater intrusion. And I'll show you a few quick slides just to remember, but our deeper aquifer currently supplies about 3/4 of the water that we pump. And a lot of the upper aquifer is high in nitrates, and we have to either blend it or treat it. This is it's kind of hard to see there on the screen, but basically in the westerly part of our community, we have areas of active seawater intrusion, and there's a circle that shows the location of the library well, which is our primary well. And this is a cross-section or cut view looking at the side of the earth, and you see these different aquifer zones. There's rock, which is the bottom of the bowl from which we pump groundwater. There's what we call the regional aquitard that separates our deeper zones from our shallower zone, and there's the deeper zone that's experiencing seawater intrusion, and an example of the location of our library well. So, the Los Osos groundwater basin, for tonight's discussion, we're going to break it up into two general compartments. First, that portion which is in the urban area, and then we have this portion out towards the east, which we're going to call the creek compartment for tonight's discussion. Here's a map showing that area, which we call the creek compartment, bounded by Los Osos Creek, essentially. And in cross-section, this is a slide that many of you have seen over the years. The yellow shows the extent of seawater intrusion in our lower zone. And I just wanted to show you there on the right how small the creek compartment is relative to the overall basin in blue. However, it has a very active source of recharge with the creek running right through it. So that's why we call it the creek compartment. ISJ, long term there. In September of 2007, the water purveyors, the three that I previously mentioned, and the County of San Luis Obispo entered into an agreement, an interlocutory stipulated judgment, which is a legal term that means you are agreeing to certain conditions under which you would work together. And this is a document that all the parties have signed, except for the courts not yet approved it, but the parties had previously signed it. And it basically provides a framework for each of us to equitably share costs relating to gathering data, analyzing our basin, with one goal in mind: a basin management plan that would stop seawater intrusion and balance our resources. So this is something that arose out of a pretty long litigation process and brought the parties back to the table and gave us a framework for working together. After the adoption of the ISJ, which I'll use that term from here out, the group members being, again, the Golden State Water Company, S&T Mutual, the district and the county have been meeting monthly, and they've worked through a program intended to accomplish a number of goals relating to balancing our basin. Basically, the two thrusts of that program are that, number one, it meets the intent of the ISJ, meaning a basin management plan that balances our basin, and it does it in a schedule that allows for timely input into the county wastewater project, and you've heard some public testimony tonight about water issues. I thought this would be a good point to point out, a good point in the presentation to point out there's many differences in the decision-making framework of these different water purveyors, the district being the local government. Essentially, your directors or the directors are voted in by the people who are our water customers, and we are a government entity that has our spending limitations. The Golden State Mutual Water Company is regulated by an outside entity, the Public Utilities Commission, a pseudo-judicial process that takes years to get projects approved through that entity, and they do that on a 3-year cycle. So unlike our agency, which can adopt spending measures, can adopt a budget annually, the Golden State Water Company has to answer to the Public Utilities Commission. Very different mindset. Also, they're a for-profit entity. They exist to return profit to their shareholders. So imagine the different dichotomy there between those two groups. The county, not a purveyor in Los Osos. They have a well that they manage here. However, they're not an urban purveyor serving to customers, but they're certainly an important participant in water issues throughout the county and, of course, in wastewater issues here in Los Osos. Then the S&T Mutual Water Company, very small purveyor, and their board members are their operators, are their workers. As part of the ISJ process, one of the things that I think everybody can agree on is a good thing is to apply for grants. And that was done, a $250,000 grant, something we pursued from the Department of Water Resources. We ranked well but did not receive funding. We thought it was a very strong grant application, but there are, as you know, water issues up and down California. We were going to use that to partially fund our efforts, but that didn't happen. We just found that out a few weeks ago. There are some cooperative efforts that are ongoing, water conservation education program that the purveyors are working together on. And then interties is something that we've all been budgeting for some time. It's included in Golden State's approved budget. And so we've looked for opportunities to intertie our systems to maximize combined use of storage in emergency condition. A quick note about undeveloped property, because this is going to become very important to understand this nuance in the presentation. Last July, many of you will remember that the county adopted a policy relating to the wastewater project for vacant property. This is the meeting where they decided that the Prop 218 assessment vote was going to be a developed property assessment vote. And as part of that, they provided the rationale that because the Coastal Commission had put conditions on the wastewater project that said you're not going to connect vacant property until you can prove that you have adequate water supply, the county thought it would be better to delay an assessment vote for vacant and underdeveloped properties until there was an answer to the water supply question. And that way, they could essentially roll that into one assessment vote and have wastewater costs, water costs, maybe habitat conservation costs. And so as part of that second 218 vote, that future vote, water supply and infrastructure projects can be funded by those folks who want to develop vacant property. So proceeds of that assessment vote could also reimburse purveyors for costs relating for development, even costs that you spend prior to the vote if there is an appropriate reimbursement agreement with the county. This is a county function, but it affects the district because you're a member of the ISJ, and you'll understand the framework here in a second. On to the work program. We began talking about this last December. Now it's June. 6 months seems like a very long time to bring a work program forward. Why so long? Well, one reason, we applied for grant funds to get this funded by somebody else, at least matching funds. We're not successful in doing that, so now we're going back and talking about how to fund this thing. But also, there was a lot of discussion and some very different opinions as to what an appropriate work program would be. For instance, Golden State was pretty adamant that some of the costs that have already been expended to develop a model of this basin should be used to the fullest extent, that we shouldn't completely redo the model right up front, because a lot of the questions can be answered without that large modeling effort. They were looking for ways to avoid the large dollar expenditures up front, and after a lot of discussion, we found some ways to do that. So here's the goal of the work program, culminating ultimately in a basin management plan. How do we pump? Where do we pump? When do we pump? Analyze the existing condition of the groundwater basin. We know a lot about it already, a lot more than other communities that are in the same water severity situation that we are. Happy to report that. Assess various methods for maximizing basin resources, including conservation. Earlier this year, the county released a technical memo on imported water. And wow, there were some big numbers in that memo. And I think everyone realizes that to the extent that we can maximize the resources in our basin, including conservation, we can balance this basin without importing water if we all work together, if at all possible. Evaluate the potential benefits of various wastewater disposal options. I should really say reuse options. How can we maximize that water resource, not throw it away? To those goals, we need to define improvements and costs. What are the nuts and bolts necessary to do this? Look for opportunities to increase the efficient, sustainable use of the basin. How do we stop those practices that result in degradation of our basin? And then define those improvements not only to help us in our current deficit, but for build-out. We're going to put a cost to what we need today and a cost to what is needed to develop vacant property. And then do all this in time to provide input to the county on their wastewater project so that they don't go too far down a path without input from the purveyors. While it's true that the county has authority over the wastewater project, even within the legislation that transferred that authority, there was acknowledgement that the district has a place to provide input, particularly on water-related issues, on basin issues. So this is the opportunity to do that in a very structured way. Ultimately, this would culminate in giving the county a number and saying, if you're going to go out for a second 218 vote for vacant property, here's the number you need to use in terms of water supply. So we're always breaking things into tasks, and there's five tasks. For the purpose of our discussion, only tasks 1, 2, and 3 are on the table for funding tonight. Tasks 4 and 5 are future funding tasks. So task 1, we basically use the model we already have, which we jointly paid for with Golden State and S&T, and we update that. That's what's called a steady state model. That means you can answer the question, what happens when I do X at any point, but you can't say what happens at year 2, year 5, year 10. You only know what happens when the thing reaches some steady state. We would adjust build-out projections of water demand. We've had some rate increases, substantial rate increases. We've had a reduction in demand already from people doing voluntary water conservation. If we implement more water conservation, where will we end up? These are very important questions. A preliminary evaluation of nitrate removal. As many of you know, Golden State has received approval to implement a nitrate removal project so they can pump upper zone water and not have to blend it to the degree that we do. And so the question will be, We know that that nitrate unit is going to be somewhat underutilized, under capacity. Is there a way that we can all benefit from that using our mutual interties to maximize the use of our upper aquifer? That's the next bullet. I think many of us believe that with the right conditions, we can use the upper aquifer and balance this basin under current demand with some conservation. That's a huge point, because we can do that without a major, major expenditure of capital, because the nitrate unit is already coming to town. Task two, we would look to that creek compartment that I showed on the previous map. That's one thing that for many years we've been wondering what the real yield of that compartment is, because right now it's being used by ag and private pumpers, but nobody's ever answered the question, what can that compartment really produce? They're using about 800 acre feet right now, and we can't say whether it would produce 1,000 or 1,100, or maybe 800 is all it can handle. Also, a good characterization of the water quality out there. This is important not only for, you know, the ability to drill wells, but also to answer the question, ag exchange of reclaimed water. Where would it be good? Where would it be not so good? You know, where are the good quality wells out there in the creek compartment? And then is that water suitable for potable purposes? We believe that it is, but does it require treatment in order to be fully suitable? So that will be an important task. These two tasks both have one thing in common. They relate to balancing our basin under existing demand. This is what we need today to prevent seawater intrusion. Task three is somewhat different in that this is going to be an important task even to answer the question, how do we serve vacant property? In task three, we'll prepare an infrastructure master plan, what kind of pipes and pumps are necessary to balance the basin at build-out. We'll look very hard at groundwater recharge. We'll have a lot of conversations about things like Broaderson, injection wells, other things, and I'm sure that there'll be a lot of input on those issues. We'll evaluate options for reuse of reclaimed water. Urban reuse, ag reuse, where does it make sense? What are the cost factors? Some of these things have already been looked at by the wastewater project, but from the lens of a wastewater project. This is from the lens of a water purveyor. You know, the city of San Luis Obispo implemented a reclaimed water program, and they're charging 90% of their water rate for their reclaimed water. So they've got a revenue source there to partially fund that reclaimed water thrust that they're working through. Prepare a draft basin management plan. That's the bottom line of all of this. That's what really the court is expecting, that we come out as purveyors, as members of the ISJ, with a coordinated basin management plan that everybody agrees to. It's going to be a road to get there. Tasks four and five are future tasks. Task four is where we prepare the transient or the time-sensitive groundwater model, dual density, meaning it can model both seawater and freshwater, which have different densities, and that's where we answer some of the hard monitoring questions. Task five, we have annual groundwater monitoring, and then we update that transient model as we gather more information. Funding. Some of you will know more about funding tonight than I do, but I can tell you about funding for these tasks in terms of theory. It depends on the objective. Tasks one and two address the existing deficiencies. They address the need to balance the basin under current demands, and that would be funded by the ISJ group. Now, these percentages, these are based on the written word in the ISJ, and for the district, our share is 39%. So because we didn't get grant funds, we had fund this out of pocket. However, we've tried to push a lot of these costs, the big costs, to the future phases, but 39% would be our share. Task three benefits future development, but it would need to be completed prior to the assessment vote, because it answers the question, how much money do you need to charge vacant property in order to provide adequate water supply? So the district would have to fund some upfront costs, but it could be reimbursed if the assessment vote is passed. So would vacant properties pass an assessment vote? You know, no one knows, but if it was passed, we would be reimbursed. Task four and five benefit future development, and those tasks would not happen until there was a secure funding source. after the passage of the second Prop 218. So we're not asking for any authorization to proceed on those tasks. So where do the dollars come in? This is the district share, so you can inflate these by two and a half times to come up with a total nut, but this is the portion that we're being asked to pay for. Task one and two, about $15,000, $16,000. That will answer the question, what do we need to balance the basin using the upper aquifer and the creek compartment? Task three, that infrastructure plan that tells the county what sort of dollars need to be put in to the second Prop 218 for vacant property, and then recommending a contingency in order to allow for unforeseen tasks that need to occur for a total of $70,000. Remember, task three, the $45,000, would be something that you could be reimbursed for if the second Prop 218 was successful. So as far as monies that would not be subject to reimbursement, $16,000 plus a contingency of $10,000. Perhaps we talk about that contingency fund. Schedule. The desire is, and all the purveyors have had schedule challenges, so you're not the only one with funding challenges, but June 2008 through August 2008, we want to get approval of the work program. We want to authorize consultants to proceed with tasks one and two. The attorney for Golden State has offered to do the task of collecting the dollars and parceling out to the consultants. So we're not asking you to approve any contracts tonight, but primarily the overall tasks and funding. But we're working towards getting the consultants to proceed in August of 2008. So August of 2008 through February of 2009 would be the completion of task one and two and the completion of task three. In 2009, we don't have a firm schedule on it yet. The county would have its second Prop 218 vote, and we would know if we got that $40,000-some back, we would know if we need to proceed on the other tasks, task four and five. So that's the schedule. Staff's recommendation is that the board approve the funding for the basin management planning and proposed work program in accordance with the ISJ agreement. I look forward to the questions that you have. You know it.
Director Tacker, do you want to start?
Sure. Spending this money is my favorite kind of spending money. Investigating the basin is so important, and securing a water supply is really what we're all about, and so I'm happy to see this in front of us. I welcome you back, Rob. I think a lot of my questions are on the post 218 and the tasks number three, in that a reimbursement to the district should the 218 pass. There's a lot of ifs hanging out there. And, it's all predicated on a successful project and then the successful 218. And I guess looking at your crystal ball, you put these dates on here from August 08 to February 09 that task three would take place. I was under the impression that the county was going to be accepting the project similarly in that time window. Are they going to accept the project, then this task takes place, or are they going to wait till the task takes place, right? They need that figure.
Mm-hmm.
Are they going to take the project and then do a 218, or that's all part of taking the project, is knowing that figure and presenting it to that second 218 voting block?
If it looks like we have everybody contributing their fair share and these tasks move forward on schedule, the county would wait for that number as an integral part of that 218.
So it could be as late as February 09,
yeah,
before the county actually takes the project. Boy, that's...
I see what you're saying. Their due diligence period as to when they actually take the project.
Right.
The county would have to answer that question. I guess they could theoretically take the project without having that second 218 answered. I mean, if they want to sell bonds or do something like that, I'd say they pretty much need to take the project. But that would be a good question to ask the county. The way that it's been explained to me is that prior to that second 218, they would need our combined answer, but I don't know how that relates to the timing of their due diligence. I'm not sure that they've exactly made a final decision on that issue either.
Okay. I have a feeling that, you know, if there's a risk involved, if they take the project and you don't have that figure for them, I just don't think they will until they have that number to then pass on to the second block of 218. But
they're not explicitly connected anywhere, and the county hasn't established any policy positions to connect them. So they could move forward and accept the project without that, but I understand the point. I'm not sure what their current position is.
Wow. It gets fuzzier all the time. You know, we're going to be talking about how to fund these tasks, and something that the district, I believe, has done twice now, and I haven't heard back. We're looking for a water rate study, and, you know, how to charge our customers to do the operations that we do, and this will be one of the things that we do with rate increases or decreases, depending on what a consultant brings back for us to adopt. Is there some reason that Wallace Group hasn't offered their service, or do you not do water rate studies?
We do some rate studies on a more limited basis. I mean, this is a pretty heavyweight rate study. We prefer to review the results, act in that manner, as opposed to proposing on it. We thought it would be better to have a consultant that only, you know, was their main specialty to do rate studies. So we don't propose on a lot of overall rate studies unless we team with one of the types of consultants that are proposing on yours.
Are we expecting some response, Mr. Schemp, soon?
We've had three responses, and in fact, we're meeting next
Monday
at 1 o'clock at Wallace Group to go over the proposals and rank order them for your action.
Good to know.
Very pleased to have three responses. Yes.
Thank you. Didn't know that. Another comment or question that I had was, is the group working with informing, you mentioned the Coastal Commission and the link between the old project and water. It's my opinion that the Coastal Commission should be brought along through the processes that are taking place so that when the sewer goes, we won't have that question out there anymore, that they know that the management plan is in place or taking place. Is there a dialogue with the Coastal Commission currently?
Not yet. That dialogue would occur as part of the presentation of the work products contemplated here. So as Task 1 and 2 come out, we say, we have the answer, here it is. I think that's the point where we sit them down and say, as purveyors, we think we have a way through this to balance the basin.
Well, I'll just say that I'm proud of the strides the district has taken already. You know, tightening up our system and investing in our system, the $5 million that the iBank money has allowed us is all good in the name of water supply, and that's something that the Coastal Commission needs to see, that the progress has been made and is continuing to be made.
Absolutely.
Also, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service is sort of watching over Los Osos and our habitat impacts, and the things that our district does on an operations and maintenance basis can or could impact the habitat. I'm of the opinion that the dialogue is open with them so that they know that these tasks could lead to further projects and impacts to the habitat. So that's something I wanted to point out. I don't know if those conversations have gone on.
Not on this task list specifically, but I know they will as it proceeds. That's okay. A good point.
Good.
Yeah.
So you mentioned the imported water tech memo. And I would have to just say that for me, the best thing that has come out of the county's process and the fine screening report, there's a lot of controversy over that report, but what I embraced from that report was CLEAS's new work that with good basin management, using the tools in the toolbox to the best of our ability, we will not have to import water. And I think that's something Los Osos can celebrate. Because importation is so expensive, and you know, we're already in debt to the sewer, and it's already a burden. Importation would just make it, it's just infeasible, in my opinion.
Right.
So I think that's all I have right now, and there's an
and I just one quick comment for Vice President Tacker. It's interesting because we do have active seawater intrusion occurring. We have this opportunity now to balance the basin, but every year we lose a little more volume out of the lower aquifer, makes it harder to do that. So time is of the essence.
Exactly, and that sort of leads me why I think these dialogues with Coastal Commission and U.S. Fish and Wildlife are so important is that these agencies have the power to stop projects, stop our progress. And because they have their hoops and hurdles to jump, they, for you know, human health reasons, our basin is at risk. And I don't want to see those powerhouses get in the way of what we can do with our projects.
Director Sparks?
I have four questions. I guess the first one is probably more for Mr. Seitz. Should another purveyor participant in the ISJ be brought in, would we have retroactive reimbursement, such as if San Luis Obispo Unified School District was brought into the ISJ, would there be reimbursement retroactively?
Most good questions have no answers, and you've just hit on one of those. You know, it would depend on the negotiations with them. First of all, you know, all the time, as far as I'm aware of, that has been spent on the ISJ has been staff time, and not this is probably the first time. You know, I haven't been here at the board meetings for a long, long time, so I don't know if you've had any expenditures on studies other than staff. And all of the parties to date, as far as I'm aware of, except for maybe the county, have only invested staff time into the process and not expenditures like you're being requested tonight. So the long and the short of it, I just don't know the answer to that question. It would be a product of negotiations with any other party that did participate in the ISJ. We would certainly push for it, but what I can't tell you as a matter of fact whether or not that would occur.
The second question on task number one, is this going to – what are the number scenarios? Are we going to be going through level one, two, and three and not do level four for these scenarios?
I purposely left the levels out tonight just because it confuses so many people. Yes. Level 1, 2, and 3 is the focus of tasks 1 and 2. However, if you do task 2 and find, boy, the creek compartment has enough water to go beyond level 3, you certainly would address it at that time. But the focus is level 3. For folks, the level 3 means balancing the basin under current demand, the folks who are here now. Level 4 is going all the way to build out with a balanced basin.
Which leads to my next question. On task one, you're adjusting build-out projections of the water basin demand. And that, you know, I see the word build-out, it spawns two questions. That's why I asked about level four, because you're doing projections for build-out. So, and I know it's only, I shouldn't say only, but it's $8,000. So why isn't, you know, partitioned so that we would get reimbursement under the second assessment since we're doing some build-out evaluation under task one? It's a small dollar amount.
Yeah, it is. And the reason for it is even under existing demand, we want to look at per capita usage. We want to look at conservation. And while you're there, it's just a very, very short process to look at expanding that to build-out. So it makes more sense in terms of the flow of the work to do that at the same time, because you're going to look at water use factors up front for existing demand anyways. Might as well look at build out at that time.
And the last question is, you're recommending we approve funding for tasks 1, 2, and 3. What would be the impact if we just approved tasks 1 and 2 and then came back later, say at the end of July, with task 3?
It would be a difficult conversation with the other ISJ members, because the reason to go all the way to task 3 is that that's the task that brings it together for the answer that the county needs to proceed with the wastewater project from a vacant property perspective. So I wouldn't mind giving regular updates to the board. Hey, we're kind of in the task 1 and 2 mode here. We've wrapped that up, and now we're going to get into the task 3 mode. I don't mind that at all. In fact, it's going to take quite a bit of public vetting just to get through task 1 and 2. But I think the message that needs to be sent, at least that staff would recommend be sent to the other purveyors, is that there's a commitment to get all the way to the bottom line in this 8-month process, 9-month process, so that there's timely input into the wastewater project. Because there's a chicken and the egg there with the funding. Until you give them the number that you need for the second 218, you know, you don't get the possibility for funding. So there has to be some progress in that area. But wouldn't mind coming back for an intermediate update and to make sure the board knows what's going on.
Okay, Director Schicker.
Hi, Rob. Thanks Hello. For the good presentation. I have a couple questions, too. First, the simple one. What were you saying about SLO's rate, 90% to the reclaimed water?
Oh, I saw that piqued your interest. You know, they implemented a extensive reclaimed water program in San Luis Obispo. You know, you go to Costco, it's all purple pipe and schools, and that water is not given away. They're charging for that water at about, I think it's about 90% of their potable rate. So it's a revenue source for them. It's still a subsidized program. It doesn't pay for itself, but it is subsidized.
So it's helping to pay for the infrastructure they built.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that's pretty cool. What has the other purveyors responded so far to this proposal, their percentages and their willingness to do any or all of the tasks?
You're seeing the tip of the iceberg. It's been 6 months of conversation to get them to respond affirmatively to these. Golden State has a very different approval process, and they've got a layer of management that is not local, that doesn't like to necessarily spend big dollars when they don't have a PUC approval for those dollars. So they're willing to move forward on these options with what they call an advice letter. That's when they just keep a tally of their costs and try to get a recovery of those at some future date. So they're willing to move forward. S&T is willing to move forward. The county supports this. At first, the tasks were more costly and broad right up front. For the grant that we applied for. And so it took some discussion with the county to say, let's spread these out. You know, we don't have the big dollars here. Let's spread them out. So with lots of discussion, folks are ready.
And then the one I don't get, just from a funding perspective, is the $45,000 for task 3. Because are you not asking current water customers to figure out things that are going to be paid for by people who aren't customers yet? So you're asking the current customers to pay for it. But it only if it passes. The reimbursement only if it passes. And are we not doing this work for the county? I'm just asking. That's how it seems.
It's a totally fair question. Fair question. It's analogous to a water master plan, mm-hmm. where all your current customers pay for that plan, which you did, 2002, and yet the plan goes to build out and recommends a development impact fee for all their fair share of everything that you're doing. And so on the one hand, you get a lot of funding out of that fair share through development fees. On the other hand, you're spending some money up front to answer that question. In my opinion, we don't want the county, I mean, I'm not to put down the county, but we don't want the county answering these questions. The purveyors want to answer these questions because our answers will be different. They're through, a water utility lens. So.
And then the final question would be to Mr. Shemp, would we fund this through our water rates? Is that where we would fund this? If we were to approve these, this is where the funding would come from? And do we have it?
We have built the budget, which you will see tomorrow, with this $70,000 in the current rate structure. It will be, of course, considered as part of the rate structure study as well. But I intend to present a budget to you that includes the $70,000.
Director Sinnott.
Oh, it was on. Thanks, Rob. I had a question about who is the consultant? Is there going to be an RFP? Is it going to go out to all the... obviously, we'd have to agree upon someone.
No, that's a good question. There are several consultants that I think would be integral. You know, we're not going to do a lot of the work product. As Wallace Group, we would just do the management, do the presentations and so forth. We'd use Cleef on those things that they're already ramped up for, the steady state model, the things that they already have. When it goes to the dual density model and the big dollars start to get spent, that's when we go out to RFPs because Cleef doesn't do those sorts of things. It would not make, in my view, the best economic sense to have a new, fresh person come in. There's no way they're going to even come close on cost. I mean, I could tell you that. They've cranked down the cost of these first three tasks to where they're even less expensive than if you just did a master plan. I mean, the purveyors would not accept anything but a very stripped-down version of this thing. So it'd be Cleef doing most of the work.
And then I'd have to agree with Director Tacker regarding the regulatory agencies having a rather narrow scope of interest with, you know, their own concerns. And we can look at the Air Resources Board requiring MTBEs, even though they're polluting the groundwater. So, you know, you've got dual interests, you know, one negative and one positive, so... they could get in the way if we don't consider their needs, and I look at task three, and I had the same view of it. Well, it's for future development, but I see it as a contingency because no matter how we divide this up and put partitions in, you know, we're constrained by the physical limitations, whatever they may be. And we might discover those later on, to be here or somewhere else. But it's a good contingency for drought, even if it doesn't go toward the future development. It's still a good insurance policy for us for drought contingency. So those are my couple comments. Thank you again.
Thank you. My turn. I guess three brief things. I don't think the regulatory agencies ever put out a regulation that intentionally gets in somebody else's way. Some of these things like the MTBE comes out later. Yes, it does pollute groundwater. Oops, had we known that. I mean, nobody does things, I don't think, intentionally to cross other agencies. And if anybody, I don't think Fish and Wildlife has anything out for Los Osos. They might be especially guarded right now. I think we've been a little sloppy with some of our operations and maintenance activities in contact with them. But I don't think that regulatory agencies are what we have to fear here. The 90% that San Luis gets for reclaimed water sounds like a lot when you think, gee, I only get a 10% cut for buying, you know, not pure water. And yet you also have to think that you're maybe offsetting the cost of importing additional supplies against that. So you're stacking it up against your existing infrastructure costs and supply distribution costs, but really you should be looking at maybe the future offsets.
Right.
And so it's just more complicated than just a flat looking at 90%. The other thing is all of these tasks deal with the future and the projections and pictures of our basin. There are specific actions that have been taken by some of the purveyors, Golden State, ourselves. But where's S&T's meters and tiered rate structures? Where does that fit into all of this? I mean, I know they're a small purveyor, but the mental impact of walking past there at 2 in the afternoon and seeing sprinklers that are dedicating 30% of the water to evapotranspiration, 30% to growth in the gutter, and 30% to a lawn is really difficult. And that issue is not going to go away, and that's all I'll say. And good questions from fellow board members. So at this time, I think we're ready for public comment on this item.
Good evening again. I'm Bruce Payne, resident of Los Osos. I hate being first. I want to wait and let everybody else talk. I want the general public in Los Osos to be sure and notice this. We're getting set up to pay over $300 a month to take our 97% clean water from us and send it back to us at a cost of 90% of what we paid for it out at the meter through a purple pipe. We're looking at recharge, telling us that a bunch of it comes from the creek out there. When I talked to Spencer Harris and Cleason Associates before they spent that $100,000 grant for the study of where the water's coming from, they didn't know where it was coming from. They feel that most of the water coming down the valley is going into the bay at Turry Creek. Even though it's a little stream going in, there's also a stream underneath that follows that same channel. So to say that it's recharged that way. At this time, we are recharging the upper aquifer to overflowing, and that includes some aquifer that is not those perched layers that you drew out there. I believe layer C is also being recharged by the septic tanks safely with no danger of liquefaction. As far as the length of purple pipe, an on-site system will give you your own purple pipe. You can manage it any way you want to, and it'll cut your water bill at the meter probably in half if you are useful in running your purple pipe through your toilets and through your sprinkler system. And you can have a beautiful lawn and save water at the same time. Conserve water. You probably stop at least 50% of your metered water use by reusing your own purple pipe with reclaimed water and an on-site system. Mr. Miller gave me some data on Z-Weed 500 filters. They're using those in schools to reflush the toilets and urinals with reclaimed water run through a Z-Weed 500 filter. Warehousers reclaiming rainwater for potable use through the Z-Weed filter. There are all kinds of filters out there that will do the job we need to do. There's also an ozonator right there made in San Luis. Oh, did I say? Yeah, you mentioned the income from the 90% original cost. But the ozonator will purify water as well as the whatever they were using, the electrical UV as big as a Volkswagen. By the way, always remember that septic tanks reduce the solids by 95%. They're the most efficient, energy efficient means of primary treatment for raw sewage. Thank you.
Thank you.
Just like to remind people that people who are currently living in homes have been reaping the benefits of the water, regardless if it was badly managed or managed well. California's water code states that county cannot compel existing homes to put purple pipe in. So they ain't going to be selling that back to you unless you want it. They can compel parks, schools, and other entities such as that to use reclaimed water. They can compel all new development to put in purple pipe for reclaimed water, only, though, if it's available and that it's cost-effective. That means bringing a line of recycled water back into this town, perhaps to charge wetlands, something like that, or recharge or inject. I hate that word because it costs so much money. But it has to be available. And task three is dear to my heart right there. And I think that will make all the difference to build out if we can get that reclaimed water going. And after going to the Department of Water Resources site and then going back to the state water codes, that I believe there is a future for build-out for Los Osos. Just as long as the county includes that element, the area, the footprint for that element. And I don't believe the Midtown site has that kind of footprint. I think an out-of-town site would. And without that element as well, we can't get what we call the Department of Water Resources would look at requests for funds with that element with more priority. And to let everybody know and remind everybody, the governor just did declare a statewide drought.
Begin understanding how much they're using and that they began being a participant in this process also, especially considering what the governor did declare today, which is going to be protecting farmers and their water. And I listened to some discussion about growing beef and that they can use. We have a farm close to our water basin who is watering acres, I don't know, probably 40 acres of grass so they can have grass-fed beef. Well, that's affecting salt water, and I think it needs to be part of the formula, and I haven't heard it being addressed, and I know that they have legal protections. But what are the steps, and how would we go about including them in the process? Because it's essential that, first, we know how much they're using, second, that they participate with us so that we share a basin. I mean, this is their community also, whether they live here or just shop here or sell their products to us. It is an issue that we all need to be part of, and so I'm really disturbed that that hasn't been put into the formula, and I don't know if Mr. Seitz could discuss where they stand in this situation. And then I also agree with Chuck, the S&T, it's pitiful. I was over there on Saturday, and they have more green lawn than, you know, probably all of San Luis. And there's sprinklers going off. There's water running down all the streets. And we've talked about this forever, and I don't see them making one step, and I haven't heard yet whether they will meter and how they're going to help participate in our plan. Also, the county has done very little with gray water. That is the state of the art for a drought situation, and I'm really wishing that we could begin looking at gray water systems that would work in our homes and get their blessing to do this instead of having to fight them over it. Thank you.
I guess task two is where the creek compartment studies come in, and I mean, until we even get a hold on that, it seems like it would be very difficult to engage the farmers in any kind of discussion about management of that part of the basin.
Mr. President, I think too, maybe if you want me to take it at the end, that'd be great, but I did have some thoughts on that topic because I think it's important.
Any other public comment on this item tonight?
Good evening, board and staff. Lawson Schaller, Los Osos. Thanks for the presentation, Rob. Wasn't listening as well as I probably should have. I'd like to get something. Maybe I missed it, or if you could clarify it. If the CSD rejects this budget, then what happens? Or if the other purveyors reject it, then what happens? You mentioned the CSD will have input on this with the county. I think you mentioned the county, or is it the other purveyors? I'm just wondering how that input will be structured and how citizens can get involved in that. Questions about meters. I think a lot of people that purchase their land with no meters probably aren't excited about getting meters. I can understand that. However, I'm in favor of, if nothing else, self-metering themselves. There have been, seems like it'd be good money well spent. Thank you.
Gwen Taylor, Los Osos. Since yelling about this since 1976, saltwater intrusion, it's nice to hear finally something's being done. But the one thing I did not hear, and that being, has been brought up before, and I'm bringing it up again, is S&T and the problems that are perceived with their not using any kind of meters on their residents. Now, it's wonderful to be conscientious about how much water you're using, but Sunset Terrace has been, shall we call it, addressing this problem, so they say, for at least 15 years or more, but yet no action has been taken. Yes, it is an expense. Yes, they should have done it a long time ago, but are they going to be required to do this in this agreement? And what is their part of this agreement? Surely the CSD is not going to pay for all of the ISJ's responsible participants. What is the breakdown of the costs of all of those that are involved in this ISJ? We need to have some kind of assurance that it is going to be equitable. Yes, once again, we're not going to get the ranchers, the farmers, to tell us how much water they're using. That's not something that they want to do, nor do they have to do. But Sunset Terrace is a confined community within our community, and they should be responsible to have meters on every resident in that development. Thank you.
Rob, I'm sure they'll be paying their fair share. It's probably pretty small compared to our 39%.
Yeah, I think they're about 5%.
Yeah. It's almost a mental...
Hey, Carrie Wagner has done a lot, doing a lot of this work. She's got the percentages here. 4%. County, 20. Golden State, 37. CSD, 39. So those are rough percentages. Are you pretty sure about these, Carrie? Because we'll... Okay. Golden State would be 37, CSD 39.
Sounds right.
S&T 4, County 20.
I just want to make one comment. The percentages between the district and Golden State, there's a switch mechanism in the agreement. So as the population and the increased demands shift, like if Golden State outgrows us and they end up pumping more water, they end up paying more under the ISJ. So it's not a stagnant number.
Because of that, we have to be very cautious with the way we use our resources. That brings up a key word, sustainability. I want to spell that for you so that you can put that in the language here. S-U-S-T-A-I-N. Ability. You can figure that one out. We need to have that in all the documents, that our approach has to include the concept of sustainability. for the public, sustainability means living within your resources so that you're not going to impact future generations and deprive them of similar lifestyles. Now, if you're more Spartan with your lifestyle, you can save more water. I am a very Spartan person. I use 10 gallons a day. Well, if everybody used 10 gallons a day, which is ridiculous because there's a lot of women that want to shower every day and what have you, it wouldn't be fair. But needless to say, the old saying, the boys like to take a bath on Saturday, you know, that kind of a thing. And, you know, many of us have heard people say that their daughters use a lot of water. So it's a relative statement. But sustainability is very important. And there's a lot of ways to do that. And I think, Rob, I think one of the things you ought to consider is the wetland. The wetland approach that they used in Clayton County, Georgia, after they had been using trees for 30 years, was because they had a drought for 2 years, just like we're having. And they were able to save gobs of water because what they did is they ran the wastewater effluent into the wetlands. The plants in the wetlands, just like Mr. Todd has explained, take the nutrients out, take the human carbon out, and you have a product that's a very usable project where the product may be potable after it gets percolated into the ground. But then you can take that water and put it in a percolation basin west of the creek somewhere and recharge our aquifer. And I think that's a cheap, low-energy, sustainable approach. A couple of other items. We're overdrafting by 70%, my goodness. It costs $65 for a water meter. Hello, over at Sunset Terrace, $65 to put your water, plus the plumbing, okay? The work. And you have to assume that if you're taking this water for reuse somewhere, that it's going to have salt in it if it comes out of the sewer. And you can only put so much salt and reapply it to an area. And that's important. So if the wetlands will take that out. And that's nice. And then you have the pumping costs. If you're going to reclaim and reuse that water, if you're going to take it back into and reuse it in the homes, it's going to cost you a lot. Thank you.
Thank you. And for the record, this guy takes his showers on Thursday, so I'm clean for the meeting tonight.
Richard Margetson. Well, I guess I've got to ask the question. I make a statement. Mr. Shemp said that he's built the $70,000 into this budget. My first question of Rob would be: does it through May 31st? The water department revenues are down almost $170,000 with 1 month to go. Now, if you have $170,000 a month, you hit that budget period, that budget number. But the budget that George put forward at the water ops meeting had a line item for administration of only $120,000 available in that budget for administration. Now, we know what the administrative draw was from the water department this past year. It was substantially more than that, almost close to five times that much. So before you commit to this, I think you need to see if you're going to have the money when all's said and done, and you have the discussion of how you're going to fund the administrative budget this upcoming year. These are all needed, but make sure. And water rates increase, you're not going to realize the revenue this year. You don't even have it out. You don't even have the study start. You know, you haven't decided on who's going to do the study at this point. By the time you get it back, you guys have adopted it. You've started the process of a rate increase, and it goes through the hearing process. You might not even see it on the water bills till the last couple months of this fiscal year. So you can't count on any of that. And, you know, you've got a water district that might defeat a water rate increase if they feel it's unwarranted after two increases recently. So if this could be put off, that would be my suggestion until you absolutely know you can afford this. And if you could have Rob answer the question if 2 weeks would make any difference.
Mr. Miller, what are your thoughts?
On that particular topic, though, I would like to go back through the various questions. As we said, I think on one of those slides, I think 2 weeks is acceptable. Maybe one way to approach it would be to approve the task subject to a funding availability in your budgeting process. I guess you're having a special meeting next week, and lots of discussion coming on that very topic. So I think showing your support by motion subject to that caveat would be one way to do it. Or you could, and good point, Counselor, you could even look at funding the first two tasks if they needed to proceed right away, and then would prefer that as soon as you're done with that budget process, which I guess is just in a few weeks here, that you go ahead and release the whole thing. But at least the other purveyors will know, hey, we're just taking a look at our books to make sure we've got it. You know, we're committed to it, and, you know, here we go. So, and I'd be happy to address the other issues, too.
Yeah. We're going to wrap a bunch of questions at the end because there was one earlier that we'd talked about. Okay, great. Mr. Bearden.
Don Bearden, Los Osos. That was one of my questions. A previous speaker asked, well, what happens if we don't fund it? Or one of the other purveyors don't
claim water if it's cost effective. I know that's present in the water code. I think there should be a lot of discussion about future development as it relates to reclaimed water. You know, the subdivision goes in, all the plumbing's going in the street. There's a time to look at that opportunity for reclaimed water use if it makes sense. Some significant discussion came up from Lindy on private well use, very important, and I'll probably not do it full justice. John, you can jump in, but really there's two ways to bring them into the discussion. The first way is the friendly, informal way. That's perhaps we're buying some land that has agricultural resources on it and making the tenant use reclaimed water, and we're taking their water back, you know, a friendly purchase. Those are ways that we can involve them. Voluntary data sharing. There's been some of that, amazingly enough, quite a bit. There's going to be more for folks who are interested in the overall water issue. That's been very helpful to date. In terms of sharing volume information, how much do you pump? That is much more difficult to obtain. Often you can do crop surveys to say, you know, what are you growing, what's irrigated, what's not. We can do that from the air, from the ground, and we can come pretty close on a number. But I think other communities that have been through long litigation processes like Napomo and Santa Maria Basin, in order to really get those folks to the table and compel them to provide information, it requires a very lengthy and expensive process of litigation. And all the people who overlie the basin do have some rights. But we will, if the information is available and we can get it under our current framework, we need to get it because it's very important information. And John, if you want to expound on that after I'm done here, feel free. If the CSD rejects, or if any other participant rejects this plan, what happens? Well, it sort of dies on the vine. Therefore, we want to hold things together as long as possible. We wouldn't have come here tonight if we didn't feel like we were there-ish. We think we are. So, you know, if Golden State has a management change or something like that, or if S&T comes back, I mean, there's an impact if any party pulls out. The issues of S&T, no discussion of water is complete without talking about meters at S&T. I know that there are grant programs available for water conservation, one coming up in August that I've got my eye on. Through DWR, I think that's some pretty low-lying fruit if they're willing to discuss that, to defray some of those installation costs, if they're interested in that. They do have to pay their fair share costs, and they've always been willing to do that. Their board has always been willing to share in costs. We talked about the budget and subject to funding availability, and we talked about what would happen under the various scenarios. Oh, how does the public get involved? I think Lawson raised that issue. I think these tasks, because we do have at least one public agency, the district, that needs to vet things before you spend money and before you approve things, we're going to be a great forum for that public interaction and maybe one of the only forums. So I see that coming back in a workshop.
Not worth the product that you receive back. And I know that that is a tough thing to swallow because you're saying these people are out here pumping with no restrictions, but then we're being restricted. That's not a product of this board. It's not a product of the California legislature. It's a long product of the law as it's evolved through the court system, and it's just the way it is. We can name them in lawsuits, and we can bring them into litigation, but when you measure the expense of doing all that for the product that you receive. Now, having said that, I think Rob made an excellent point that through different technologies and methodologies, we can get a pretty handy estimate on what their water use is. You know, and typically the decisions then can be made as to whether or not how they should participate, if they should participate at all, because then you know what their draw is, and we'll also know what their draw is over time, you know, because we can estimate their crops and things like that. So I think it's very risky when you start thinking about bringing in just overliers that are pumping. So I agree with Rob. It's hardly ever worth it.
Just a couple quick final closing notes. Do you want to thank the district in this process? I think the district's been in a leadership role, and you've authorized staff time to do that. I think without that, we wouldn't be here. Thanks for authorizing that to occur. Thank Carrie Wagner for her good work. She's been very integral in making this happen also, and for the community for supporting.
Director Tacker, you had to come.
I had some a question. Something that you said, Rob, the voluntary purchase of, say, cropland, is that the word you used? Or
That's probably what I said.
Is that what you said? And it kind of raised a small red flag for me. Would we ever eminent domain a property and then use wastewater or some other upper aquifer water to irrigate it so that we could take them offline from the lower aquifer?
An excellent question. I mean, I was referring more to the county's process. For instance, if they're going to spend X million dollars on a spray field, why not spend X million dollars on an ag property that's in our basin? You know, those types of questions where the purveyors can get involved and provide that level of input as to how they would go about that process. It'd be at their discretion.
You know, Ripley had a extensive discussion about ag, and one of his proposals was to incentivize. Is that something that the purveyors would carry out, or is that back on the wastewater project?
I think that would still be a county function. However, the strategies to do that and the cost associated with that is something that we all need to work on as a group, the county being part of the group. And so the continuum from, hey, we got water, you want to use it and give us your well water back, all the way.
The purveyors. And I have to say, just a little bit in defense of S&T, that they are trying. They have a brand new water tank. I watched that Petticoat Junction tank leak for some time, and they've put in a new water tank at a very expensive cost to their ratepayers. I know their intention is to meter, and that they don't have an organized homeowners association, so it's going to take more than other say homeowners associations that have a board that make rules, it's going to take a little more for them to get that in place. I've actually walked down there and counted the lawns, and there are 67 lawns at my last count, so less than half of the homes are watering a lawn. But the best thing that can come from us is a little bit of peer pressure, and whether they live in S&T's water district or in our water district, let your neighbor know that his sprinkler is watering the street. Let your neighbor know that you've got overspray and it's inefficient. You know, sometimes people aren't home to watch their systems. And, you know, just as a good neighbor, that helps conserve some water, or you know, let them know that it's running twice a day and it only needs to run one day. You know, that's what we can do as neighbors. And then, you know, if you put in a nice new xeriscape landscape, perhaps that may inspire someone with a lawn to retire it. So those are just some of my thoughts.
That's good.
Director Sparks.
Mr. Miller, Cleith is going to be doing the updating of the models. That's correct. And so my question goes, I mean, I'm sure Cleith is going to be around, but the ownership of the model, the files, so that, you know, tomorrow they decide to move to, you know, North Dakota, and do we then get, I imagine if they run it on software, they have a license or whoever, is it transportable to a common software package, and do we get ownership, do we have ownership rights to the model? I'll be more concerned we go to this more complex model on the transient model, but I just wanted to ask that.
Absolutely. We would retain ownership of those work products. Actually, it's been a subject of a lot of discussion because we want to make sure that the purveyors who paid for it are the ones who want to control the use of that model. We don't want everybody and their brother out there using it for other purposes without our consent, paying their fair share, that sort of thing. So we would retain ownership of those products, and they would be produced on platforms that would be usable by other consultants in the event that we needed to go that direction. That's a very important issue. That's a lot being spent. I did want to indicate, too, that the county, in being willing to participate in a disproportionate share of this, because they only have one little well here and they're paying 20% of the cost, it's been good to have them at the table.
I've heard that there's some potential. It's not the optimum situation, but I wanted to get staff's thoughts on that, on going that route again.
Mr. President?
I was looking for other comments from the board, but I don't see any. Rob, what did you have?
The way I was envisioning it is you'd approve tasks 1 and 2, and then approve task 3 subject to funding availability in your budget process. And as soon as staff could establish that funding availability, task 3 could proceed also.
So moved. I make a motion to approve staff's recommendation to approve tasks 1 and 2 and approve task 3 based on funding considerations to be considered next week in budget hearing.
I'll second.
Okay, not being a resolution or an ordinance, I believe we're good for a voice vote, collective voice vote. Yes?
Council's advised that we should include the contingency in the motion. The contingency in the motion.
Task 1, 2, and the contingency, the $10,000 contingency.
I agree.
Makers amended the motion. How about the seconder?
Second agrees.
Okay. At this time, all in favor, stay aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay, the motion passes unanimously.
Thank you.
Thank you for the good presentation. Appreciate it. It's nice to be kept on board on the good news. Okay, we'll take a quick 10-minute break. Next on the agenda will be a public hearing regarding solid waste collection rates. And Mr. Seitz, you said you had something you wanted to speak to us about on this.
Yes. This is an item that comes up periodically before public agencies, and it's a request by the franchisee for a rate increase. And I looked at this ordinance, and I recognized it as one that I drafted many, many, many years ago. And it's a pretty good ordinance, and it would be a really it would really be. Wait a minute, you haven't heard the punchline yet, so you're still warming up. I commend it's a well drafted ordinance, but unfortunately, unfortunately, depending on what side you're on, the Supreme Court decided the Bighorn case about a year ago, and a case right before that was called the Shasta Community Service District case. Most lawyers, including myself, was of the opinion that if you were basing any type of rate on a commodity charge, which is that it wasn't subject to the notice and protest hearing requirements of Section 6 of Article 13D, and that included solid waste, which is a commodity waste thing. If you think about it, the more waste you generate, the more you pay, because it's you buy more cans or a bigger can, and away you go. So my view of it, and it's the view that I have uniformly given to all my agencies that I provide solid waste advice to, especially ones like this one where solid waste is mandatory under our ordinances, that we need to use the procedures of Article 13D, which is the 45-day notice procedure. If you take a look at this well-written ordinance, Section 3, Section 3 requires the franchisee to give 30 days notice before the effective date of the imposition of the fees. And what I'm going to suggest is that Section 3 be modified. By the way, I just saw this today, so I would have tried to have had a better staff report otherwise. But I would amend Section 3 to say protest procedures, and then I would add the following language. Pursuant to Section 6 of Article 13D and Government Code Section 53755, the district, along with the franchisee, shall provide the 45-day notice to district property owners and customers. And then, more importantly, what I think is because these rates come up under a CPI clause, in other words, it's a standard cost of living clause, that the notice to the property owners allow the board to reset rates consistent with the CPI clause without having to go back to a notice public hearing with the 45-day notice. And most of the boards that I represent have agreed to that. I had my staff take a look, since it's a 45-day notice procedure, and we have to draft a notice, so we just can't turn around and do it tomorrow. We started taking a look at August meetings. And if we did the meeting on August 23rd, the 45-day notice would have to be in the mail by July 7th. If we conducted the hearing, the adoption hearing, on August 7th, the 45-day notice would have to be in the mail by June 23rd. We're lucky here because I have worked with Tom Martin in his capacity as the CEO of South County Sanitary, Inc., so he's familiar. He's drafted the 45-day notices. I've edited them. So I don't think it's going to take nobody's going to have to reinvent the wheel to do this. Most of it's in the bag. What will be required from staff is to do two things, and that is in order to preserve your lien rights, which aren't customers. So I don't know. I'm going to assume that's going to take a week or 2 weeks of staff time to, you know, in between other jobs that you're doing is to get that figured out as to those two classes. But so my suggestion is that we probably try and set for the later date of August 23rd to set the public hearing for adoption of the ordinance. That way we can probably be pretty sure that we will have plenty of time to get those two classes of folks out. So that's the modification to Section 3. I also want to note that in the ordinance, with the adoption of the latest community service district law, we can adopt rates and charges by resolution. We don't have to always do it by ordinance. Back in the day when this wonderful ordinance was written, community service district law was different. And back in those days, you had to adopt your rates and charges by ordinance. But with the new laws, you can do it by resolution. So the other thing that's amended in here is the authorization for the board to adopt solid waste rates and charges either by ordinance or resolution so that the board will have more flexibility into the future. That just concludes my comments. Oh, by the way, this is a very minor CPI rate increase. This is not and by the way, this is within the contract. This rate increase is authorized by the contract. And that's why I'm suggesting that when we go out for this Prop 218 notice that we include the CPI clause in there so that every time he requests a rate increase with the CPI clause, which is allowed by the contract, we don't have to go back out to another notice hearing. And I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Director Sparks, you had a question?
Mr. Seitz, should we decide that we wanted to consider an increase to the franchise fee from the current 10%, would it be better to, would we want to wait for this and postpone it till we considered that, or would we want to do it in a separate resolution?
I think there's two issues there. Typically, the maximum franchise fee is authorized by ordinance. The actual franchise fee that the district implements is by contract. I have this recollection, and it's kind of foggy in my mind, that you're authorized to go up to 10%, but I think you're currently probably where at 7?
10%. We went back up to 10% last year.
Okay, so you're back up at 10. My suggestion is that if you're going to implement a larger franchise fee, that you make it part of the 15-year contract negotiations, because that's where the actual contract fee is located. The ordinance just gives you the authorization. And so I'd include it as part of the contract.
I'm finding the discrepancy. Maybe there's an explanation. But in the staff report and all through some of the tables, it's 2.67. And in the letter, it's 3.07. I didn't catch why or how.
Yeah.
I may just be missing something.
If you look on the second page in, there's a short letter. You're right. The 0.4 savings brings it down to 2.67. He gave us the credit for a saving the closing of the office.
So the first letter, April 23rd, 08, he says COLA.
It's been superseded by April 29.
Pardon me?
It's been superseded by letter April 29.
Thanks.
I'll make sure I understand the process. If we send out a 45-day notice, then it comes back to the board and we act once, as opposed to tonight where we read the ordinance and then in 30 days.
Yeah, what I'm suggesting, though, because of your existing regulations, what I'm suggesting is that you introduce the ordinance tonight.
Okay.
You set the hearing for adoption on the, I put my notes away here. On what, the 23rd?
Mm-hmm, August 23rd.
On August 23rd. That will give you plenty of time to get the 45-day notice out. And also, when you adopt that resolution, then into the future, you'll be able to adopt rate increases by resolution as opposed to ordinance, which is a much more streamlined and cost-effective way of proceeding.
August 23rd is right. A Saturday.
Uh-oh. But did I say
August 21st? Would that work?
It's what we calculated was the second meeting in August.
Would be August 21st.
21st. I apologize.
Yes, Ms. Vega.
I had a question for Mr. Seitz. John, you had stated that the district was going to be sending the letters out to the two classes of customers, but we don't have the customer list. Mission Country does.
That's right, and that's why. With my past dealings with Mr. Martin's companies, he's always been willing to send the notice out to the customers on his nickel.
Right.
What the district is going to have to do is figure out, and he'll give us the customer list. Mm-hmm. We have to figure out somehow which of our customers are not the property owners. Because we have to, so when you kind of think about it, and probably what you can use is mm-hmm. the old assessment rules. I mean, it's going to give you a very good start because mm-hmm. that should have a list of the property owners that are
right. We actually have a fairly current list because Wallace Group just had to update it for the tax rolls, so we can probably use that list.
Yeah, and that's who it is. It's the property owners on the last assessment roll that are not your customers. So it's an arduous task, but
yes.
It's not. You don't have to spend 5 minutes on each customer. You can, once you get it.
Am I correct? So that would be in the neighborhood of $120,000. Is that going to change? Number
it's
one.
About $158,000.
$158,000.
Yes, sir.
And my question to the attorney, the old new attorney, the young old new attorney that runs well and everything. I hope he's still running on the beach.
I'll take old.
More battle scars. How do you verify low income people? What is the process to do you just, if you have a tenant, if you're a landlord and you had a tenant that's low income and they want to pay less and you're making them pay it, do they have to submit a form to the CSD? Is there a verification process? Could you clarify that? And then how much of the low income how much of this is used as low income? How many people take advantage of the low income rate or the half can rate? Thank you.
Is that sort of information available through us, or would Mission Country have that? Mission Country's got all that. Okay.
Al, we can ask Mission Country to tell you. Mr. President, if I might respond to that. I think if, and I don't know where I, right here. The ordinance, is the staff report has in there the new rates. And if you take a look at the rates, and quite frankly, Mr. Barrow, I don't know how to respond to your question as far as the methodology. But what I can tell you is the rates for single-family residential, the proposed rate is low income rate is 841.
Right.
The half can rate is 1139. How he calculates the low income rate or how you verify it, I don't know. I don't know if anybody else in the staff knows.
Okay, additional public comment on this.
I guess Lindy Owen, I just wanted to discuss the issue of what it costs to mail these notices. And I know in the bigger picture it's probably nothing worth talking about, but I wonder if it could be done with a postcard versus an envelope letter and stamp. There's a minor savings because I was trying to think 5,000 homes times 43 cents. It is expensive, and then that's one round. Then you also have to go to the property owner. So I didn't know if anything could be included in the monthly bill, but that comes from Mission themselves, I think, put out the bills, right?
Do you bill bi-monthly?
It's bi-monthly.
Bi-monthly.
I think, Mr. President, if I might answer that question.
Yes, please.
I think that's exactly what your monthly rates are mailed to the customers by Tom Martin directly. And I think that's where you're going to see it come through. It should not be a direct expense to the district. The only direct expense to the district should be the mailing into the property owners that aren't our customers.
Okay, and I guess that's one of the paper saving.
It's $158,000. The financial statements that are in your packet for tonight through, I mean, the most current ones show that the budget for franchise fees is $112,750. Just clarification on that. And do we have the staff report shows nothing in here about what the increased revenue will be over the current revenue with this increase. There's nothing in there about that. But my main concern is about Joe's comment about raising the franchise fee. The franchise fee comes from total revenues. So basically you're asking for the trash rates to go up so Mission Country can, you know, franchise fee basically is a kickback to the district for allowing them to collect the trash in the district. So, you know, what figure are you looking at increasing it to or discussing? I mean, everything is going up. Water rates are going, you know, you're going to be looking at possibly going up, especially with what we heard tonight. You've got the wastewater project at some point, and now trash rates are going up. The franchise fee comes from what is collected from the ratepayers. It's not this, you know, benevolent gesture from the provider that, oh, I want to give the district some money because I'm a good guy. You increase the franchise fee that the district collects. It comes off the backs of the people that pay trash rates in this community. And this budget is almost solely used at this point for administration. You have very few, I shouldn't say you don't have any, you have very few programs dealing with solid waste that these funds are used for specifically. Most of it is to supplement the administrative budget. And if I could get answers to those other questions.
Mr. Schimpf.
Mr. Morrison did not hear properly. I said that the franchise fee income for next year is projected to be $158,000.
Franchise fee projection. Okay.
Now, Lou Tornatsky, I don't have much to say about the resolution. I thought it was well crafted. I'm very pleased to see John Seitz back here with quiet competence and a bit of humor, and I hope he comes back again.
Just a brief comment, yes, in regards to what Mr. Markinson said. I haven't seen the budget that is apparently coming tomorrow, and after we got the first review of the water budget, it was clear there would be some issues with the administration. I don't know what the answers are going to be. So anyway, that's why I raised the question now while we're talking about solid waste franchise fees. And I agree with Mr. Morganson. Any increases are going to be paid by the customers. His characterization is accurate. And, you know, we're going to be looking at a budget that would continue the district, you know, as an ongoing concern. And
about 6 weeks ago, I think, we authorized the closing of the Los Osos office. And something's come up since in that I recall that we directed staff to accept the payments at the CSD office. And that's what I've been telling people to do. And I learned first by rumor, but then in my trash bill that...
Point of order, Mr. President. Should this be just covered under administrative reports? I mean, I
could bring it up then.
I think it's
again.
More appropriate.
I just know that we're on the topic of
solid waste.
Solid waste, and the closing of the office is mentioned in the staff report. So,
okay,
if you'll
please
allow
be brief.
Me,
please be, I, please
my
be brief.
Question then is, what's going on? And where do the bills go? And what changed from our direction some weeks ago? So he can answer that in his report, but that is a question out there.
The direction, what we asked was to, Mission Country asked for permission to close the office, and that was what we went to the board for, and the board approved that. We thought at the time that we would be doing it at the district office. However, he found there was another person that stepped forward and said they would like to do it, and for the opportunity of not having to burden the district staff, I said, why not? I did not come back to the board. I felt that that was well within the purview of the general manager.
Yeah, and I believe I shouldn't say that. I'm sure that copy spot was, or the print shop was up there next to their old office, I believe. So people are used to heading in that direction. It's nothing out of their routine. Okay, any further comments or questions from the board on this? Lisa.
Sorry, I'm a little confused. I just have a question. You want us to approve this tonight, but like Joe said, we don't have a budget yet. But we need to do it because of the timing. And I'm confused about the 15-year plan versus just the extension for the summer and the franchise rates. I don't quite get what you suggested.
Staff's probably been a little bit confusing here. What you have before you is just a straight, I hate to use the word vanilla, but a vanilla rate increase from your franchisee that is consistent with our existing contract. And what staff is suggesting is that you introduce the ordinance under your old procedures that says you can only adopt by ordinance. Introduce the ordinance. Adopt the amendments suggested by staff, set August 21st as the date for a final approval of the ordinance.
So moved.
Second. This is an ordinance. We will need a roll call vote. We're just introducing it tonight, actually. We're not really voting on it, so.
Read the ordinance by title only, thereby waiving the obligation to read the ordinance in its entirety. You can make that motion either at the time you introduce the ordinance or at the time of adoption. It's clearly within your prerogative.
I move that we adopt the ordinance by title only tonight for the reading and by roll call vote. Introduce the ordinance. Thank you.
Okay. I assume the second's in concurrence.
Concur.
Okay. This is a Los Osos Community Service District Ordinance 2008-01, an ordinance of the Board of Directors of the Los Osos Community Services District amending Section 3.12.330 of the District Code. That's saying you can adopt by resolution or ordinance, and adopting fees and charges for solid waste services.
Thank you, Mr. Seitz. I believe we're ready for our roll call vote.
Director Sparks.
Yes.
Director Schicker. Director Sennett.
Yes.
Vice President Tacker. President Sasania.
Yes. Okay, let the record reflect that was unanimous. And we'll move on to administrative and committee reports. And there's patient Phil. Thank you, Chief Ranares, for hanging out, being with us.
Good evening, Mr. President, members of the board. You have before you the April
chief's note or staff note from the fire department. In the month of April, we had 89 calls. Of those, 61 were medical aids, 23 requiring advanced life support, with 7 reported as fires. So, about an average month. First couple months of the year, we were well over 100. This was 90 calls. There is a letter in this package detailing a request from the focus group we've been talking about the last couple months to the San Luis County Fire Safe Council. That letter was accepted. There was a meeting held approximately 2 weeks ago where the focus group was accepted and formed. You'll see that in a later staff note. So we do have a Los Osos focus group formed and working. If you remember, the objectives of this group is to help your board and myself come up with fire safe plans, defensible space projects, and then seek funding for that. There was quite a bit of training going on. This is the training period for both the CAL FIRE folks and the reserve folks in the month of April. That's detailed in my staff note. We did one community service outreach to the Sunshine Preschool, and we continued with some special projects such as the telephone system and building a shed around the emergency backup generator up at the station, which was quite weathered due to the salt air. So that concludes my report. If there's any questions I can answer to that, great. If not, I've got a couple other points I'd like to move on to.
Many questions from the board? I see none. Thank you for another excellent job.
No worries. Just wanted to brief you on hazard abatement, which started in the last couple weeks. We had some folks out doing inspections. We sent about 450 or so. I don't have the exact number before me. You'll see that in a later staff note. To talk about a couple grants we applied for, kind of a success story here. We applied for two OES grants to fund projects that were identified in the local hazard mitigation plan, which, if you remember, we did a couple years ago, submitted through OES and FEMA. So of those two, one of them was accepted. Accepted doesn't mean it's funded. It means that we're moving on to the next two or three processes. So I just wanted to kind of pass that on to you. Hopefully we'll be working on that. And receive, if it's approved, probably it's 75-25. So 75% of the from the grant, 25% for us. But it's $125,000 we're looking for to implement green space projects in and around Los Osos using mechanical thinning and fire goats. The last thing I have for you is, if you remember, in late March, we received some plans from a Cal Poly class about projects we can do in and around Los Osos. We were looking for the third plan on disk. I was unable to get that. So I have for each of the board members on CD two of the plans. I'll have one CD available in the fire station for public to come look at, containing those two plans. And then I have the full three plans in written format. If you'd like to see the third one, I can either allow you guys to take a peek at it, or someone can come into the station if it's not checked out to one of the directors, and they can look at that. Remember, with these plans, they're students. They did a very, very good job. Many of them have really good plans that I hope to implement with either this grant or some of the stuff the focus group will be working on. And then there are some projects in there that will probably be illegal if we tried to put them in, but it's a good thought. It just wouldn't work here in Los Osos. So, again, is there any questions I can answer for you? Okay.
Not at this time. Thank you. Okay, thank you, Chief. Next, we have Utilities Manager Report, and I believe, Ann Kudart, you're going to just kind of give us a little bit of news about chipping days and some other goodies.
Yes, good evening. I helped coordinate the district spring chipping days, which was held this past Saturday, May 31st. 8 district staff members participated in the day's event. We began about 7:30 getting the equipment to the site at Fairchild Way and setting up. Starbucks donated large 2.5-gallon coffee and sent out their assistant manager, Royce Lyman, who served us and brought the coffee and all the fixings. Carlock's donated 3 dozen donuts to the event. our local Vons donated $25, which in a gift, a store gift card, which enabled us to purchase water, drinks, and individual juices. The event began at 9 o'clock. Utility forces headed out into the community to do the curbside shipping. We had 30 residents that had called to schedule for this courtesy. And just to let you know that we got calls starting the beginning of March for this event, people calling in to be sure that they were on the list. We were lucky enough to have lunch from about 12 to 12:30 so the crews could come in, get a break, and get the noise level down for a little bit. Lunch was provided by Darren Nichols and his employees at our local Subway station, our Subway restaurant, excuse me. Darren not only discounted two large sandwich platters for us, but he also threw in two big trays of cookies and was... And I'd also like to thank Director Sennett, who stopped by with home-baked cookies also, and the crew took them home. They were they were real happy about that. The event ended at 3. We closed the site down. At that point, we had offloaded 78 loads of chipping. Green waste was chipped or disposed of. Chips were available for the public. I went by Sunday about 11 o'clock, and they were completely gone. Throughout the day, CCC, when they filled their truck up with chips, they took them to the fire station. I think we offloaded, dumped about 3 big truckloads at the fire station for landscape needs. Starbucks, Subway, Carlux, want to thank them for their support, the local businesses. I'd also like to thank Coast National Bank, who donated $200 to our event, Rabobank, $200. Bayosos Brokers donated $50 to our solid waste events. John and Vivian McNeil donated $25, as they do for each and every one of our events. They always come in and give us a check. We were lucky enough to receive a $1,500 grant this year from the San Luis Obispo County Community Fire Safe Council. So that'll greatly help offset the cost of the event. Excuse me. Kim Miner from the Ace Hardware donated 8 pairs of heavy-duty work gloves. American Marburg discounted their deluxe model porta-potty, which we greatly appreciate. Had water and soap in it, so we were good to go. Tom at Valley Liquor donated all the ice to keep the drinks cool. And Sam at Baywood Market donated a case of water and Gatorade. So I think it was a big success. We had a lot of people thank us as they came. Had a lady that came through on, I think it was like her second or third drop-off, and brought homemade muffins. She baked muffins. So especially the California Conservation Corps were just great. Our reservists couldn't have done it without them. So it was a success. Everything went smoothly. Thank you.
Thanks to our staff for making that event a success. That's a wonderful community event, and to all the merchants, too. It's wonderful, the support that we do get in this town. Pretty cool place to live, actually. Okay, so that'll wrap the utility manager's report, I think, for tonight. Okay.
George is sick. He came down late this afternoon with a bad fever. Thought he would try to make it, and he hasn't shown up. The written report is presented, and if you have questions, I'll be glad to write them down and get answers for you when George gets back.
Director Tacker.
I have one request. I believe it was the May 15th meeting when Carrie Wagner was here giving us the iBank update. She talked about... having gotten a concurrence letter from U.S. Fish and Wildlife.
Anything else from the board? Okay. General Manager's report.
Thank you. These last several weeks have been tied up with two major items. One has been the ongoing litigation. And in the process of working on the second item, which is the budget, I've talked to all of our 8 different law firms to get an idea of what they might be looking at for expenditures next year. In addition to that, there's been active activity on at least several of the cases. And as you know from events earlier this evening, we've had a change in district council as well. So those two items have t- taken up most of my time in the last several weeks. I've also been working with council on these solid waste issues, which we talked about tonight. And earlier today, had an opportunity to meet with the Audubon Society at the site and review with them their plans for bringing water to their new purchase, which they have yet to close on. They indicated, and the most interesting thing that came out of that is, number one, they're amenable to some of the alternatives that were suggested, which they want to go back and study. But number two, and more importantly, is they are not going to have a plan for at least 6 months. So that was, and what we promised in return was that during the next month or two, we will cost out all the various options that we talked about this morning so they can make a decision on whether they want to put their money into this or that, or perhaps save some money and put it into plants. But that was an on-site meeting this morning, went very well. Meetings I've attended since the last time was a meeting with Fish and Wildlife, which raised some interesting points. Also, we had a RAC meeting, and all of you were participants in the LOCAC joint meeting that we had a week ago. 2 weeks ago.
Questions from staff? Yes, Director Sennett.
John, I was wondering if anybody's, if you've spoken to anybody from the using the community garden about the garden's future payments for water, things like that.
Thanks for asking that question. Yeah, as you know, I have talked to one of the members. It was referred to me by you. And what I told the gentleman is that the community garden is still there, and the people there are still using it. The reason we returned the money to them this year was that we felt that we didn't want people to think that it was I have to be careful how I say this, that the exact space they're in may not be available to them next year. So we didn't want to encourage a lot of activity, conditioning the soil, spending a lot of money and time in that particular space because we're not sure what next year will bring. But at the moment, we're full bore ahead. Those people there can and should plant any way they want within that area. So he was relieved to hear that, and he said he does most of his growing in containers anyway, so he's not particularly wedded to that site. But until we really exactly know what we're going to be using for our blending facility, it's still a little iffy, and we'll do it. I would caution everybody, and I'll say it right now, that audit is from 06-07, and we're going to be talking about at the same night a budget for 08-09. That's 2 years difference. So it could be somewhat confusing. However, the audit team will be spending most of their time not talking numbers, but talking processes and procedures. And of that, we're all going to learn. So that's on the 17th. Excuse me, on the 19th.
Is that presentation a final presentation, a draft presentation?
It is the final presentation.
When will we receive the draft to review, or when will the public receive a draft to review?
Well, you have the draft now. The auditors are recommending that until it's final, that it not be released to the public.
But how can they comment on it or study it or read it in preparation for that evening's public process?
If you're asking my opinion, I don't see any reason why it can't be released to the public today. I mean, I agree with you. The public's paying for it. The public has a right to it.
So would it just be our vote of ours?
I'm sorry?
Would we just vote on that?
You don't need to vote. If you want it, we'll make sure it's available in the office. Mm-hmm. Or on PDF.
So the auditor is not adamantly opposed. It was
no,
just their
not.
Recommendation.
Correct.
Okay.
Mr. Shimp, I mean, I believe the Water Ops Committee and Finance is going to meet next Wednesday. They could certainly review it at that meeting. Is that correct?
I'm sorry?
They could certainly comment it on that meeting if we agendize it for that committee meeting.
Of course.
Well, I'd like to see it released. I don't see any. If it's ready for other people to, the more eyes we have on it, the better.
You already have it, but would you like us to send it again?
I have the PDF too?
Yeah.
Oh boy.
But,
no,
but
I just,
would,
yeah.
Would you like it PDF?
Yep.
Or
both.
Hard copy or both?
Both.
Again, will do.
She's been a little distracted this week, I know.
Mr. Schimpf, I would suggest if and you can talk to Mr. Sneed, if we agendize it for the Water Ops Finance Committee, you can include it as part of a packet for that committee, and then it's available for the public and directors as well.
Okay. With that, committee reports, do we have anything from emergency services? Well, Phil was here. Still here. I figured he bolted after that. We made him wait so long to give that report.
Mr. President, members of the board, we did have an emergency services committee meeting, I think it was two Tuesdays ago. At that meeting, Mr. Schimpf actually presented the Brown Act training, so he missed a meeting in his update of recent meetings. We appreciate it. They were very happy with that. The Brown Act training is required by the board for the committees, and so they fulfilled that obligation. Additionally, we talked about the budget and reviewed that, got some recommendations, and that budget is since or will be turned into the board tomorrow for next week's meeting. We reviewed the schedules, made no change to that. Those are budget changes made by the board next week prior to the adoption on the 19th, and discussed the focus group that we talked about here at the last little talk here a couple minutes ago. Can I answer any questions on the ESC meeting?
Looks like none.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you again. Any other agency committee meetings that anyone went to? I'd like to hear how the meeting with Fish and Wildlife. Did you get to that on the 29th, both of you? Yeah. Could have your input on that. I haven't talked to you about that at all.
Right. We met with four people? Was it four people from the Fish and Wildlife Service last Thursday to talk about issues of concern to the LOCSD and our customers. And it's a very interesting meeting. I've worked with Fish and Wildlife for almost 20 years now, and I've never met those people. So they came out to Los Osos. That was pretty amazing. And it was good to talk to them. They have concerns. They have some misinformation about what's been going on with us, so it was kind of good to share. They had some misinformation about Broderson, Tri-W, restoration bonds, non-restoration bonds, fencing, snails. I think both Director Tacker and I brought questions from our constituents, because I talk around town and I hear concerns that people have. They don't understand why they see people being treated differently by the Fish and Wildlife Service. And there's, you know, different levels of concern and review. And we went through a few of those issues. Focused a lot around the endangered species, the shoulder band snail, which we have everywhere in town. We're one of the one places in the world that has the shoulder band snail. So, but I thought it was a productive meeting. I thought it... I think that I hope that it continues, and I hope our main issues have to do with construction for water lines and the need for habitat conservation planning for some of our activities. And also, the county has that same need. And my recommendation to them was that we combine forces and save money. Because not only does the county have to do a region-wide HCP, habitat conservation plan, for Los Osos, but County Public Works Department has to do one for their regular maintenance activities. And their regular maintenance activities are very similar to ours. It's piping, it's excavating, it's right-of-ways, it's edges of road, it's edges of, it's little patches here and there. So Mr. Schimpf agreed to get with Public Works and kind of try to see if we could combine forces on that and save a little money on that. Those are the issues that I remembered to be the most important, and I think Julie can add some more. I might be forgetting something.
I think something that was a little bit glaring was their how much they don't know about Los Osos, in that who serves who services. And they didn't know Golden State even existed in Los Osos. And their operations, of course, are similar to ours. And actually, it's something that might need to be taken into the ISJ discussions, is how operation and maintenance, or perhaps something they call out of the street in parts of our town because it's so sensitive. But the county seems to mow away, and that those activities need to be covered under something. So those discussions need to come back to the board and how we're going to do it.
Mr. Shemp also produced a very nice map, or staff, I don't know who did it, but it was a good map that showed those two different areas on a map, and they were blown away. They didn't even realize how much land the other water districts are responsible for. So that was kind of news to them, and that was good to share. Right. And the other issue we talked about, what was the, there was one more issue we talked about. Dry W, Broderson, fencing, working on HCPs, and I'll think of it.
There was an issue that you folks brought up, and I'm not sure I still understand it, except that Broderson was used for mitigation for Tri-W, but now there's snails back on Tri-W, and what they said was, and correct me if I'm wrong, is so if you want to do anything in Tri-W, you have to find another mitigation site.
And that is what they said.
And I don't think, I haven't had a chance to talk to our interim counselor, but that just seems like double dipping in the wrong way somehow.
I concur with you. That was $4.65 million for just that land. I think they're overreaching, but that is something that it's going to become a legal battle.
On the other hand, that property was purchased for a specific project. The impact took place. Every snail that was going to be killed with the building of a treatment plant probably was killed with the grading of the property. So the effect upon the snails took place. The mitigation has been used. I mean, I can see their argument. I'm not saying that I want to totally buy into it, and I don't like it, but I definitely see, and it's consistent with other projects that I've seen from them. I mean, the snails died unless they were all moved, and I don't know if we have a report that...
There is a report that...
Yeah, I was thinking snails, that this Morrow Group had
Morrow
done...
Group, they found 13 snails, and they were relocated. So there, I'm sure there were, you know, shells found, and all of that was mapped, and you can't believe what it takes to do what we did. But the... You know, yes, the impact took place, but we've also been hampered with our ability to. Now we really can't mow out there for weed abatement. We can't take the fence down because it's become habitat. We can't put the fence back up for the safety of the people. It's a conundrum. It really is.
I don't want to continue to beat this, but what surprised me, ladies, was that when they were talking about that Broderson Tri-W, all four of them were going like this. I mean, it wasn't just Julie Vanderweer's impression. Roger Root and all of them were going, oh, yeah, that's the way it is, which at this point, we all expressed surprise and probably shouldn't do any more, do some reviewing, but we need to take a look at it.
Okay. Director Sinner.
I was going to suggest that the fence is a mitigation for Tri-W.
Time, habitat, native plant. Good question. That. So.
Lisa, when you say alleyways, I think that's a term that's not used too often.
It's
in
an Eastern term.
It is. And are you referring to the unimproved roads that have paths that people or pedestrians
unpaved
traverse?
Roads. Unpaved roads in Los Angeles.
You're referring to the roads that were never paved as to opposed to the roads that were once paved but now don't have pavement just because it's been a while. Okay. You're making sure. Okay. Consent calendar. Are there any items that are going to come off the consent calendar tonight?
Four, five, and six.
Four, five, and six. Is there anything staying on the consent calendar tonight? Okay, we got three, seven, and eight.
Yes.
So you want each handled separately?
Yes.
Okay, at this time we will take public comment on Administrative Committee reports, consent calendar items 3, 7, and 8. Excellent. Okay.
May I?
You're entitled.
Al Barrell. I'm on the Water Ops Committee, so I'm requesting that you send me a PDF tomorrow of the draft budget along draft audit with, along with everybody else on the committee, so we can be up to speed on that. And we didn't get the Brown Act drill last meeting, so I assume that you're going to put it on this one.
David Iglesias, will it be possible to get that PDF link online somehow so we can just call up the LOCSD site and make it easier for most of the public? And if you don't have a computer at home, they have a computer at the library. They give you 1 hour use of it, and you can take care of computer business there. Even have an email. If you don't have a computer, you can go to the library and check emails there. The Midtown site, when the county decides, if they decide they're going to take the project, they'll probably ask for that property. And then Snells will be their problem. And if things go well, they'll end up selling that property to somebody that will make good use to it. And it won't be used as a wastewater site. And we got elections coming up. Which chairs are going to be coming up? Julie?
I'm not sure that's on the consent calendar.
Is that number 7?
No.
1D, when is that coming back? And is it my understanding that the audit will be available to the public tomorrow? Or are we waiting until it's presented at the Water Ops meeting? Just clarification. I didn't get an understanding there. And that's it.
I'm not sure if it'll be available by tomorrow. What are the chances of PDFing it to the website?
Monday would be a better guess.
For a hard copy?
Monday?
Monday? I'd like to suggest Monday for
Monday. Okay. Yeah.
Thank you. Monday be fine. Tomorrow's a zoo with the budget, and Karen's not there, so we're short staffs on Friday.
Okay. Monday.
And 1D.
And we haven't had a chance to talk to the new interim council on rescheduling 1D.
Any additional public comment on administrative or committee reports or consent calendar items 3, 7, and 8? Okay, seeing none, now we'll bring it back to the board, and I will entertain a motion.
I move that we adopt everything except 3, 4, 4, 5, and 6. 3, 5, and 6, right?
4, 5, and 6?
Yeah, except the ones that Joe pulled. 4, 5, and 6.
That would be 4, 5, and 6.
Okay.
I would ask the maker of the motion that change it from adopt to accept the committee reports.
I agree. I make that motion.
A second.
I'll second.
Dueling seconds. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Okay. Passed unanimously. Okay, now on to consent.
I'm sorry, but there's two things on, there were two resolutions on the consent.
Yes,
calendar.
There were. 7 and 8, so
yes,
we need individual
sorry.
Roll call.
Yes, please. Director Sparks.
Yes.
Vice President Tacker.
Yes.
Director Schicker.
Yes.
Director Sennett?
Yes.
President Sesania?
Yes.
Thank you
for keeping us on track. Okay, now consent calendar item 4, approve prior meeting minutes. Board discussion?
I wasn't at the previous meeting, but I did go through all the minutes. There is one, there's just a typo on a comment by Alan Martin about brining legal action. I think that would be bringing. And then I don't know what a brining legal action is. And there's another thing, I guess I would ask Director Tacker. There says Julie Tacker stated she had recently seen Gordon Hensley and Maria Kelly at Richard LeGros' home. So I guess this wasn't a public comment. I'm wondering what the relevance is.
It was a public comment. I was speaking as a member of the public that night.
Thanks.
Yeah, you did.
Were they all there together, or was it one at a time? Or
they were there at different times on the same day.
And who they do and do not visit. So it should be clarified in the minutes that Director Tacker was speaking as a citizen of the community and not as a director. So I would like the minutes to reflect that, because it doesn't at this time. And should Director Tacker choose to contact me into my business addresses as a citizen of this community, she would be able to find out from me that my public records requests reflect my concerns regarding the financial status of this community. And in the public records request that I requested regarding Joe Sparks' requests of made of staff, I was concerned as to his frustration with trying to discover financial status of the district. And so I did make a public records request. And more specifically, I did discuss with Richard LeGros the resolution regarding the repayment of the bond and the fact that the resolution hasn't been agendized, and the resolution regarding how this district is going to repay that bond payment and how it reflected the previous agreement with the bond company from whatever, 2001, 2002. Director Tacker has contacted me one time in the past, and that was the day after the election. And she called me at 8:30 in the morning. She was the first person to contact me when it was assumed that I'd won a seat on this board, and it was because she was a ping pong ball. Felt like she was bouncing between the board members and her position on the board. And I felt that it was premature for her to contact me, in that the votes had not been sufficiently tallied, and it was unclear as to who would be representing this board. I feel that if Director Tacker is able to represent me, a constituent of this district, it is inappropriate to question who or who I do not visit, and is it the policy of the board to police who I do and do not visit in my concerns regarding the business of the district? And I would question and urge comment from other board members as to what their position is on who I do or do not visit in my concerns regarding the financial status of this district. I think it's inappropriate to have that statement in these minutes without clarification of her position either as a director or as a private citizen.
Thank you.
Mrs. Vega, if I may.
Yes.
Throughout the minutes of all of our meetings, you refer to me as Vice President Tacker. In the minutes in question, when I spoke as a member of the public, you referred to me as Julie Tacker. Is that your practice?
That's correct, and that's why I do it, and that's why you were listed among the rest of the public rather than separately as a director.
So I believe that there is a sufficient delineation between director, vice president.
And expressing that to you, I'm not saying there's anything anywhere. I'm just trying to say what I think the concerns were. And that's about all I'll say. Director Sennett.
Well, I kind of feel like Julie's action was kind of like Gladys, who lived across from Samantha the Witch, you know, looking, there she is, she's doing this again. And so I think that's the way she felt emotionally. And she did it as a citizen, at her own perception. So that's all I'll say about that.
Yes.
Just a quick comment, Ms. Kelly. It has to do with the fact that Gordon Hensley is a litigant.
And that's irrelevant to me.
I'm not asking. You asked for our feedback, and so that's what I'm saying. Because Gordon Hensley is a litigant, and because you're doing public records requests and meeting with Gordon Hensley and passing papers to Gordon Hensley, we have to be concerned because...
How do you know I'm passing papers to Gordon Hensley? As a director, you're making a statement that I'm passing...
That's a very fair question, and I said we would not have a back and forth.
Yeah,
and
that's just...
Yes, she made a statement. Okay. Room, come to order. That's the end of this discussion. There's no further. I just don't think we need to carry this any further.
I'd like to finish my sentence, please. I'd like to reframe my statement because I did not see Maria. I'm not asking for your.
Will you let her finish her statement?
This is exactly every time I've tried to have a conversation with Ms. Kelly. This is how it goes. She doesn't even let me finish my sentence. If you would like to discuss with me off camera, I'm perfectly willing. But you asked for our feedback, and now you're interrupting, so none of us can give you our feedback.
Let's all keep our voices calm, please. Okay.
I have the floor, and I'd like to take it. I was politely trying to tell you that just like me, when I was an activist and I was seen with potential litigants, every one of my public records requests was scrutinized by a lawyer at this CSD because I hung out with, passed papers to, shared information because I believed that I was doing the right thing. I believe that you believe you are doing the right thing because that's what you believe. That is your position. That's all I'm saying. But because you are doing it with potential litigants, your public record requests will also be scrutinized by an attorney. That's the way it works, because you're a potential litigant. And you may be running for election, and you may or not be. You're an activist right now. You're a public member, and you're an activist, just as I was. It's no different. And I accept that. That's part of the territory. I'm asking you to accept that. And you can or can't. That's all.
Show up at this lectern anymore. You know, she's concerned about the finances of this district and where things are going. Richard was the chair of the finance committee. If he's such a wonderful, caring, thoughtful citizen about the resources and the financial future of this district, why isn't he here at this lectern? Gordon Hensley was the chair for years of the fire department. Why isn't he here voicing and backing up my concerns about the reserves that have been plundered? Guilt by association sometimes. You know, sometimes it's who you hang with. These people, and I'll say it again, I think I've already said it tonight. Taxpayer Watch better be in this room next Tuesday for the budget hearing. Every one of them. And anybody who's running for office better be in this room next week. Or you have no right. You got the right. But if you want to be a competent candidate, qualified candidate, you need to be here. And you need to have researched. You need to know what you're talking about. And you need to make comment and show your concerns. And get the board to adopt your thoughts or ideas, or at least try to. Thank you.
My name is Al Barrow. I'd like to offer everyone a little empathy. Maria, I understand your frustration, and I know how hard it is when your concerns are being discussed and you can't talk about it. But that's the rules, and I'm sorry. It's just the way it is. It's tough, but I know you're tough and you can handle it. So don't interrupt anymore because it makes your candidacy look bad. Now I'm going to talk about the Constitution of the United States. And we, the people, reserve our right to criticize our government. And we also have a right to express our opinion. And at the end of each board meeting, there's a time when each board member gets to express public comment. And I think that that's what happened. I personally feel very sympathetic towards the directors who are being attacked with a lawsuit by the Taxpayers Watch. I think it's very unfair. I don't think it's actually, I find that it's somewhat illegal. I think as a public servant, you should not have liability for the decisions you make. And you're making them as a board, you know, you're not making them as individuals. And I think there's something really, some flawed character in filing a lawsuit, unless there was some real cause to do that. And I would like to repoint out that you ran on a ticket that said you were going to stop the Tri-W site, and you were going to stop that sewer because it wasn't sustainable, it wasn't environmental.
Sorry. And who asked for that to be thought separately? And we got some fireworks out of that. I wasn't here for that meeting. I was watching it on TV. What was it? Something, because I'm not on there. I looked at it, I said, I don't remember this. So I look at every meeting that there is on the when they're on TV, and I can't make all of them now. I'm busy. Joe, I'm wondering why you did ask this to be separate. Did you make an explanation for that? Or is there something in there that you needed to have changed for this issue? I don't remember if you did, but I looked at the remark that Julie made, and I didn't see anything that concerned the board directly. It was as a private citizen, but I liked, because I like being a wordsmith myself, it's been called that by Jerry Linthal, being able to weave in certain aspects of some argument into an agenda item. That clearly what I heard from Marie Kelly had not really anything to do with the fact that you made a comment as a citizen. And it got far beyond that. And I was really just concerned on parliamentary procedure, how this got to where it was going. And now look at that gavel. And when somebody says, no more comment on this issue, by a director, it shouldn't happen. You can stop. Parliamentary procedure allows you to stop a director from. And the colloquy between somebody and sitting out here in the audience, in the chair, when you say no, no means no. And so I just wanted to point that out as well. I saw that. I couldn't believe it was going on. Again, take a firm hold. And whoa, when you say whoa, if you got to use the gavel, use the gavel. You mean whoa, stop. So, but other than that, I wish I would have been at a meeting just to hear that. Thank you.
I think the question was, I pull him and I ask for clarification. I think We've got a lot of clarification.
I move we approve the minutes of May 15th and May 19th with the typo corrected in Mr. Martin's comments on the May 19th minute.
Second.
Provided there's no additional public comment, we will entertain that. Okay. No additional public comment. We'll bring it back to the board. We've had a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay, all that. Item 5 on the agenda, approve warrant register for May 2008. Director comments?
Thanks on 16th Street. And claims he could not sleep because of the noise of the dehumidifier, which was running to keep the new sandblasted metal free of rust. And so we put him up at the Sea Pines for a couple of nights. He continued to have concerns after that, so we struck a deal that we would pay half of his lodging at a cheaper place. And so later on, you'll see another item for him to stay over in Morro Bay.
Were there any noise readings taken at his residence to demonstrate that perhaps we were exceeding county noise thresholds, anything like that?
No, but we weren't. We knew that we weren't.
There's a lot of neighbors in that cul-de-sac. We could be booking a whole wing of rooms.
Okay, 17151, Pinfield and Smith on invoice number 2, contract 9. My notes say, was this for work on other contracts? That was at the last meeting. Again, you know, we got an invoice and it came out that on contract 9 they were at the limit. They weren't coming back with a change order, but they were going to come back with a change order, and it was at the limit because they had charged the other contracts. So it's just, I'm assuming that's accurate. That's on contract number 9, we think.
That's correct. That issue will also be on the next agenda, however, to take a look at Penfield Smith's, yeah. And Carrie Wagner will be back for that as well.
And then Wallace was for, this is for the program manager contract on the Wallace invoices, I'm assuming.
Correct.
You know, one thing, again, it's difficult for me. You know, I do request, you know, I've requested a lot of information, some, and I haven't gotten in the past. It's hard for me, I think, on where I don't get to look at invoices on the Schwartz invoices, so it's hard for me to approve them. And one thing, that's the other concern, my main concern, though, is, you know, we have Sullivan invoices to the end of March, and frankly, you know, I expect that we get information back timely, and to the particularly to our staff, our general manager, and you know, there was, I mean, I'll say it, there was concern from her that giving information to the district about me, and you know, and she used the term because I had an attitude, and one of the items was I had requested the maps of the prohibition zone, and that concerned her that I'd asked for maps of the prohibition zone that were referred to in legal documents.
It's on the register, yes.
I was just wondering, Mr. Shemp, I know you have some codes on the right, but would it be hard for the, what is our new person's name?
Ampi.
Would it be hard for her to put the codes? We used to have the codes on the warrant, you know, like one, what fund, 100, 200, 300, 400, 500. Because some of them just say, like, grading, observation. Well, that one says water. But there was one that just said professional services, and I didn't know if it was, you know, I assume it's water, but just, you know, 500, 600. If that wouldn't be too much, that would be helpful for me.
Would you rather have the number or the name?
I like both. I mean, it is because you have this like professional services CIEDB. It's more than water, but it's code 500. So that'd be that's why we used to have another column.
Mr. Schimpf, can you answer the question about the framing of the photograph?
A picture was donated that would fade with sunlight, so we did spend extra money to get what's it called, e-glass, I guess, so that the picture would not fade over time. And it's the one that's hanging in the lobby, and it's been hanging there for years.
The same photograph just got reframed?
No, it was a new photograph.
Did you take the truck?
That had been donated.
Okay. What happened to the old photograph?
It's, I believe, in the water department.
Okay, and who donated the new photograph?
I don't know. I can find out, but I don't know.
Any chance Mrs. Vega knows?
I'm sorry?
Mrs. Vega's in the room. I just thought she might know.
I don't know. I don't know if it was donated by the person that took the photograph, is my guess.
Yes, Director Schicker.
I have one more question. Wasn't the arbitration supposed to come out of the bankruptcy money? The arbitration with
yes.
Walsworth, Franklin, Bevins, and McCall. And it's under, it says admin wastewater, WWP.
That was just caught this week and will be reversed.
Okay, thank you.
And while you're there, you might mention, you might notice on the last page of this that for the first time, the South Bay Law Firm, Joe, your favorite.
Yeah, that's in the right place.
Is at 3,000 instead of 10. So.
Yay! And that's in the right place.
That's in the right place.
That's where the other one should be.
Okay, public comment on this item.
Thanks, Joe, for a whole 3 minutes on this. First one, and I'm just bringing these up because of the situation you're in now. Well, some of them not just because of the situation. Vehicles in the water department, you know, there's one that he drives all day. Why? And the Impala isn't being used, it seems like, by anybody anymore. Mr. Schimpf uses his own car whenever he goes anywhere in the district or outside the district. Now George is using his own car, if that's what this explanation says. And then there's an item further in here that the Impala just had $770 worth of repairs done to it for, I thought we were told a couple of months ago that it was sold or being sold. And now it's that expense is showing up under the water department budget. The next page, I brought this up in closed session, but I want to do it on camera. Poor Richard's Press was paid $5,354.69 to produce the water quality report for the water customers in calendar form. Almost $2 per customer in the water district. And that doesn't include getting it mailed. That doesn't include the staff time preparing the draft for, you know, it being sent in, putting the pictures in, whatever. You guys have got to cut, or you got to direct that these things cannot be coming up in the future. The framing of the framing of the picture was $349. Yeah, it's great somebody donated it. You don't have the money to have that professionally framed. It was donated. You put it in a place where there's no sun, or you put it in a closet till you can afford to frame it or get somebody to donate the framing. Anna Jane's on here twice for $1,815 and $660 during this month. How much of that was to correct previous errors that the auditors needed correction on? I mean, there's things all the way through here. I agree with Chuck, the John Ponzetti stay. I mean, that the justification that for that is absurd. I mean, you've opened up the door for anybody who's inconvenienced in the future to, oh, I'm sorry, I didn't realize my time was up, to come forward with something like that.
We'll see you Tuesday night.
Good evening again. I'm Bruce Payne, resident of Los Osos, member of Pizzledorf lawsuit. I'd like everybody here and at home to realize that that lawsuit is protecting or attempting to protect everyone's civil rights, including Mr. Sparks. This money that's spent 1/4 of the bill by the CSD, by vote of the board, is for all of the community's protection against the illegal actions of a rogue government enforcement agency. It is violating everyone's civil rights. We expire them now after notifying them that they expired several years ago. I don't know. The point being is that this whole thing is very fraudulent actions and civil rights violations by a rogue government agency. And we have to fight it. There are 80% of the people voted yes to encumber their house and their neighbors' houses because Jeff Young said we must keep the pressure up in case the county chooses the Tri-W project, which is exactly what 2701 is all about. Look forward to it. Thank you.
Well, I hope that the warrants will get smaller as time goes by. If they're over 5,000, aren't you supposed to get approval from the board on any warrant over 5,000? Is that correct, that the staff is not authorized to spend anything without board approval if it's over 5,000?
I think that's why we have co-signers on checks and things like that.
Say again?
That's why we have co-signers on checks and things like that.
Oh, you mean there's just get instant approval by just co-signing the check rather than taking it before the board? The other question that I have would be, it's $193,000 this month. So that's like around $250,000 a year. It's a lot of money. I don't know. This is all part of the budget, I guess, and it's all in the budget, or is some of this outside of what the budget had in it? That's my question. I am generally concerned about the finances because we no longer have the money from the wastewater project, and that's the basic business plan that this CSD was created under. And I know that there's a shortfall of money here, a lot of money, and we can't do business as usual or like the previous board did, yet we are. So I'm just asking you about that.
Yeah, I didn't really hear. I mean, most of these expenditures are pre-authorized. It's not like Penfield and Smith. That's authorized way before that check's cut, that kind of thing. I think all of those questions are going to be hammered out as we grind through this budget process. Obviously, with the registers being out printed and visible, there's a whole lot more questions these days. I have a lot of issues about lunches and things. There's going to be quite a few items that get examined very thoroughly and probably, well, not probably, I think there'll be some changes made in standard operating procedures. There have been things that have bothered me for a while, little things I don't understand, and we can't ignore them. So I don't know what the latest is on the car. I had heard that we were going to get rid of it, and now we've repaired it. I don't know, maybe that was in preparation for getting rid of it.
Last year, the board approved an administrative charge for the wastewater assessment tax roll, and that by, according to the bond council's opinion, that the district was entitled to recoup costs directly related to servicing the bonds, including like the bank charges and also the cost for Wallace Group to prepare the tax roll. And so that's probably what that is, because it's collected by the county along with the actual bond repayment.
And I do remember it now. And it was also to pay for the bond council, which was $600 an hour.
Right. We're going to be preparing the tax rolls for you for June 19th. And we're reviewing the administrative charge. And it is going to go down somewhat because we will not have bond council charges for this year. But we will still be calculating based on Wallace Group's, and also there are bank fees that are annual charges that are charged to us for that. And so those two charges will still need to be collected if your board decides to retain an administrative charge. So you will see a calculation of that and a recommendation to have that on the tax rolls for next year.
Okay, but what the problem is, what, at least what it's writing down here, is that that went to Bank of New York by a mistake. It should have gone to us, and it went to Bank of New York. Is that true or not? It says, may have been wired by the county to U.S. Bank. This is what it says on this report. Mm-hmm. Okay, so we'll fix that on Tuesday? That's kind of important to me.
I'm hoping to, yes.
Okay, and then it says there may be unrecorded interest, and maybe we'll have that by Tuesday. Okay, and then the other thing that was important to me, and it's something Director Sparks also mentioned, is could we have an update on the repayment plan, if we have one, or if we're planning one, the repayment plan of the borrowed reserves on the bond. That's what I want, because we talked about that yesterday when I was in the office. So,
I think you've jumped ahead to the next agenda item.
Oh, is this the next agenda item? I thought it was attached to the financials. Sorry.
No, it's not.
Okay, I'm on the wrong item. Sorry.
I'm Director Tacker.
Yeah, that's pulled for the next. The only problem I have with talking about the warrants, not talking about them any further tonight, is that when we're talking about a budget next week, we're talking about next year's budget. These expenditures were all in the last month, and it really isn't appropriate to talk about these expenses when we're talking about our future. The audit is talking about stuff that happened last year. So really, the time to talk about what's been happening in the most recent past is now. I'm tired. I don't want to go on any longer. But that's, you know, I'm glad these are in front of us. They're expenses incurred by the district. We need to approve them because people need to get paid. But how monies are spent needs to be curtailed. And a finance committee is a great place to vet this, and I know we haven't had one. It sounds like this kind of thing can be agendized through the water ops / finance committee. Is this something that you would take to them, the warrants?
It may be a matter of timing because when we have the water ops and finance committee meeting. If we have these on the, it would make more sense if we bring these to the board on the, but you know, I think it may be a timing because we have it on the second Wednesday, and so on the third meeting it would make more sense. But I don't think if we're going to have these on the first meeting, or they need to be on the first meeting of the month, you don't want to wait that 3 weeks from when the water ops to review these.
Right.
So,
well, I hope the message has kind of gotten through to staff that some of the staff report then. Or is this just
no, I'm not
fuel
suggesting
that we
that
bring in our brain?
That's right.
Okay, so maybe I will pack.
I mean,
this.
If you don't like the bill for donuts, then next year maybe there won't be donuts, is what I'm saying.
Yeah. I hear you.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I am really, really adamant about the gentleman who was put up at Sea Pines. We knew that noise was going to be an issue with this contract. We were right on the borderline of the county's noise thresholds. The contractor or our construction oversight firm should have been required to be out there with a noise meter, taking measurements to see if we were actually violating the county permit. And if we weren't, I don't see where we have the need to spend the money to put the gentleman up. There are just, I guess there are a lot of neighbors in that cul-de-sac that I hear from about noise complaints and what's going on up there. And, boy, if the word gets out, we're going to be booking a wing down at Sea Pines. Now, I don't know if, I guess that's just as strongly as I can state it. I think we should have, there should be some contract provisions that require a noise meter, and we make some definitive determinations. We don't just do it by complaint, because then the loudest get the room. Anyway, I'm ready to finish this item.
I move that we adopt the warrants.
For May of 2008?
For May of 2008.
And we have a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Okay, and that brings us on to agenda item 6. Approve financial statements for the period ending May 2008. Board discussion.
I think actually Mr. Schimp answered a number of my questions. And I think maybe before we hear from the public, maybe you want to elaborate on some of those, namely in terms of the presentation format that this made it difficult to look at the mid-year budget, and then you have what you called a revised budget, and I wanted to make sure those were the same two things, because the way it was presented was different than the format we'd seen at the mid-year budget. So I don't know if you want to comment on that, Mr. Schiff, before we hear from the public. And then I also had a question from Mr. Schiff. I think he was going to check today in terms of the cost of the audit and how much more. Was it $3,000 more or $28,000 more than what we originally budgeted?
The first to the mid-year budget, or the financials as stated, that is the mid-year budget. Our new accountant didn't label it as a mid-year. She labeled it as the, whatever you said there, the amended budget. The format, lack to do it her way. I discovered early on, and this is no criticism of this individual at all, but she's not the, I can't go into her and say, okay, how are we, give me a ballpark, and she will not do it. She's just not cut out that way. When you get an answer from her, it'll be right to the penny. And until she has it right to the penny, you're not even going to get a glimmer of how it's going. So it's at the moment, it's a little frustrating because we've been without for so long. But I have a lot of faith that as time goes on, it'll get better and better. In regards to the audit, the board has in front of you two pieces of paper which explain why the audit went over budget, but they will be here and they are aware that they will be asked that question. I told them that because there's another one yet that you haven't seen that brings the total up to around $53,000. So, Joe, it is about $28,000 more than originally. It's more than double. And you can ask them why and how. And I'm holding their last payment until you have that discussion with them. And they're aware that we are holding it and are not charging us the, they have a clause to pay within 10 days, but they're not holding us to that because they know they have to come down and explain it to all of you because there's no way I can sign off on that. And I wouldn't expect you to either.
Director Tacker.
In the Fund 301, the fire, it's the AMPI writes this report. Is that correct?
She did.
Okay. She points out three things, one being the Zone I, monies from Zone 9I. She, I don't think, understands how that works, so maybe Phil can work with her on that. The other thing that I noticed here, the public facilities fees won't be coming to the district. Public facilities fees, we've only cashed in public facilities fees. They come from the county when development occurs, and the most recent expenditure to the fire department was the bathroom upgrades that were done last year, and that money doesn't come to the district. It stays with the county until we have some reason to charge it out. Then it talks about reserve increases, and some monies have been on scheduled to be transferred, and I haven't seen that happening. And there wasn't much discussion at our last Emergency Services Committee, but there was some email correspondence from Mr. Benares to you, and then you forwarded it to Sandy. And I guess there's a $72,000 figure, there's a $98,000 figure, and then what was mentioned in the Emergency Services Committee materials that
were on the 19th about that specifically. The other two, as we mentioned before, and as AMPI says in her staff note, have not yet occurred, because she wants to make sure the money is there.
Mr. Schimpf, on page 5 on the water, when I look at this, it looks like we're expecting an interest payment. Is this at the end of the month of June? We get a lump interest payment, and what is that for? And it's interest income of $138,800.
When you say page 5, what are you referring to, sir?
Page 5 of the financial statements. The in your attachment, you have the staff report, and then you have the financial statements.
And your question again, please?
Well, on page 5, if you look under water and the budget, there's, and I can't remember what it is, there's the interest income of $138,800. So can you remind me what this... it's a budget of $138,800, and then there's other revenues of $54,000. And you look at the year to date, which this is through May 31st. So that says in the next month we're getting a lump interest payment of $124,000, and we're getting some other revenues of approximately $45,000 in June. And I don't understand that.
No, I'm pretty sure it's not a typo. If you look on page 12, where you see an expanded version of 500 fund, you will see the interest income from the iBank of $118,000, and we haven't received it yet.
Any other board questions or comments at this time? Okay, we'll open it up to public comment.
Aren't you glad you're back?
All
Richard Margetson. I'm going to follow up on something Julie said about the facility fees. There actually will be facility fees booked. Anything in the community, remodeling or anything that has a facility fee tied to it for Los Osos, comes to Los Osos. We have a facility fee account. The county's not holding that. Right?
Correct.
Right. The $46,000 or whatever that's in facility fees, is in the district's in control of that money.
Absolutely.
Right. Okay. So that will probably get clarified as she understands more about it and has discussions with Phil and Matt on the budget. But I just didn't want that out there, that account. Budget expenses except for personnel costs. This is due to catch-up salary adjustments and increases. It is estimated that these costs will exceed budget by $80,000. That's not a typo, right? That's $80,000?
That's not correct.
It's not correct, or it's correct?
There's no way that can be correct.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, if that's the catch-up boy. Anyway, it's not correct. This report talks about significant trends, favorable or unfavorable, and you know it lists them by department. I'm a little concerned that there's a few items in the water department that are, I think there's a significant variance from last year that aren't mentioned, but maybe those will get brought up at the budget hearing. And we'll probably talk about it then. I haven't seen the budget and I haven't seen the audit, so it'll be interesting. But thank you.
My name is Al Barrow. And I have to admit that a layperson would not really understand the implications of this. I like the description of each fund, what it's for, and I think that's helpful. And there's some items in here like the $28,000 the auditing service amount. I recall when you approved. The board approved $25,000, and then it went $28,000 over. How do you justify that? I mean, were you expecting when you made that decision that it might go over, and you were just being conservative? That was one question I had, and then I thought, well, it would be nice to know how much money we have in the bank. As I understand, all the funds are deposited in one account. Is that correct? From each of the 1 through 900, the monies from each of those funds are kept on the books separately, but in the bank account, the monies are all commingled, so to speak. I'm just trying to understand that. It would be interesting if and I don't know if you folks agree or not, but if you had a number of how much was in the first part, the text section, if you had a number there of how much was in each of account, and then we had the total amount in our bank account, I think it's important to know how much cash we have. Budget numbers can be moved around and interpreted in a number of ways by professionals, but for lay people, just the idea to know how much our assets are. And by the way, this is for 10 months. Is that correct? This is not for a full year. 11 months. Okay. So we got more coming. Anyway, I'm just a little concerned about, I don't see how we can balance our budget because we have so much expense.
We're going to cut expenses where we can do what we can to increase revenues. I mean, that's what we've been doing. We're going to continue doing what we've been doing, examining expenses and cutting where we can. And, I mean, how else do you balance a budget beyond that? Sell assets? I don't think we're there. I don't know if you...
I think one comment is because we weren't getting the financial statements. I did request a series of the bank balances, and as of April 30th, our basic operating checking account was at $700,000. Our LAIF is about $870,000, and so those. Yeah, but you have to be careful too, because those can fluctuate. You know, we have reimbursements for the iBank loan, so those can often fluctuate. And I think when you look back when we set the reserves, we had them in terms of cash and in terms of targets, where Anna Jane tried to have the two of them match more closely than I guess had been done in the past. But and remember that in the LIF you have a pool component, and you have that there's a reason there's. I'm not going to say buffers, but within the LIF, there's some that's allocated to solid waste, fire, water, and the different funds. So that, you hear a lump sum like $700,000 in the LIF, you're $870,000. But again, given the cushion, given what is targeted for things like the pool fund, our reserves are still not where they need to be, and particularly when you look at these financial statements, the other problem has is we're not even treading water at that, and that we're not building up the reserves, particularly in the case of water, where we need to go, understanding that we're looking down the horizon with the supplemental to the wastewater project with capital improvements. And you look at the charts from the fine screening report, and that was very rough, where they talked about capital improvements around the purveyors and of $14 million. Now, I don't think it's going to end up being that, but, you can just use that as a conservative number, that, and you project that out over a 5-10-year period, that says, water rates to justify those capital improvements. I mean, you can definitely envision where you'll be doing an additional $300,000 to $400,000 a year. Possibly, and I am throwing out numbers, but the point is, you need to engage in those capital projects. You have to have the reserves built up. That's the point I'm trying to make.
I was in the office yesterday working with John and some of the staff, and with John's permission, Mr. Shim's permission, I asked AMPI if she could produce what we used to have last year, which was a monthly or a weekly cash balance to include in our financial report, which is what we had with Kathleen Schumacher and with Anna Jane. And I want to bring it back because it was helpful. But as Director Sparks said, you got to keep in mind all the
accountant. But I have a good memory for the history of this CSD's finances. And I remember when I first started coming to the meetings right after they sold the bonds, and Bruce Buell told the Tribune that you were $2 million in debt before they sold the bonds. That $2 million was paid back out of bond money to the emergency funds then, and it was paid with interest. That was sewer project money. $19.5 million worth of bonds has been spent to keep the CSD running before they left. And also, they robbed the emergency funds again and spent part of the funds from the Water Resources Control Board's gamble of $6.5 million. So, basically, you're running with an underfunded government. You're not going to be able to balance a budget. There's not enough beans for the bean counter to count. That's the problem. And I don't see how, without a wastewater project to rob, you're going to ever balance any budget. Thanks much. Hope. Good luck.
Thank you. I don't agree. We'll get there. Okay. We need a motion.
I move that we adopt the report as amended, or else as a draft. I guess we should adopt and receive the report as a draft because there were corrections and they've been all been noted. So is that an okay way to do it as a draft? Okay.
I'll second that. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Okay, let's see. Where are we at? The future. Special meeting budget workshop Tuesday night. Tuesday night, not Thursday. Tuesday night, June 10th, here at 7 p.m. Nothing but budget. So that should be an interesting evening. And then we'll have our normal closed session later on the 19th of June. 5 o'clock for the closed session, 7 for the special meeting here. And then we probably should be thinking in advance about that July meeting on the 3rd. That's Thursday night right before the three-day weekend. And we don't need to make decisions tonight, but that's just one to keep in mind. Do we want to hold firm on that July 3rd date? Anything else from the directors tonight? Any of the other board members? Okay, well, yes.
Thank you, Mr. Seitz, for coming.
You're welcome. Yes, yes, we really appreciate you stepping in today. I mean, that goes without saying, but we'll say it anyway. Good to see you.
I did want to say I want to thank Mr. Seitz. He came here on extremely short notice, and I mean, you know, it would have really impaired our ability to have a meeting had he not been available and agreeable to come here.